From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. In a moment, a special four-hour live report, roundtable discussion with Linda Moultonhouse, Steve Quayle, Jim Mars, Alex Jones on secret societies. What do they want? Of course, Linda Moultonhouse with us in the studio today and tomorrow. A little Christmas present to you, Linda. Welcome.
Thanks, George. I really love this. And for listeners, you are being bathed by one of the most beautiful coast-to-coast glass light signs that I could ever imagine. This is a beautiful place to do this show.
It is. It's a wonderful studio indeed. So stand by in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast. Steve Quayle, Jim Mars, Alex Jones, standing by. I'm George Norrie, Linda Moultonhouse, our special guest tonight, Secret Societies on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me bring you up to speed, first of all, in some of the stories of the day. First of all, a very horrible situation in North Korea today. Up to 3,000 people may have been killed or injured in a horrific train collision and explosion at a station near the Chinese border just hours after the North Korean president had passed through the same spot. The blast was so strong that debris flew into the air for 10 miles around the crash site. North Korea declared a state of emergency after the crash, but the country's secretive communist government cut international phone lines and stopped information from leaking out. So we really don't have a lot of information there. How many people they're expecting, projecting 3,000 people may have died in that collision. In Dover, Delaware, a website published dozens of photographs of American war dead arriving at the nation's largest military mortuary, prompting the Pentagon to order an information clampdown. The photographs were released last week to First Amendment activist Russ Kick, who had filed a Freedom of Information Act request to receive the images. Air Force officials initially denied the request, but decided to release the photos after Kick appealed their decision. Now, after Kick posted more than 350 photographs on his website, the Department of Defense has barred the further release of the photographs to media outlets. The photos were taken at the Dover base, home to the mortuary, and most of the images are of flag-draped coffins. Quite frankly, we don't want the remains of our service members who have made the ultimate sacrifice to be the subject of any kind of attention that is unwarranted or undignified, according to a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense. I've got some mixed feelings about this. We'll talk about this a little bit later on in our discussion on secret societies. I was in the Navy 9 years. I have fortunately not known anyone who has passed away fighting for our country. I've been saved, really, the grief of that, but I do have some comments about this. Fearing that terrorists might target Congress, the House has approved a bill to set up a speedy election process if 100 or more members are killed. The House, in a 306-97 vote, put aside for now the larger issue of whether the Constitution should be amended to allow for temporary appointments in the event that an attack caused mass fatalities among lawmakers. The measure would require special elections within 45 days of the House Speaker confirming that a catastrophic event had left at least 100 of the 435 seats vacant. Language was added to ensure that the military personnel stationed overseas would have their voting rights protected. And following last winter's shortage of critical influenza vaccinations, the federal government now is considering expanding the number and types of vaccines currently held in reserve for emergency use. The goal is to stop unanticipated shortages of frequently used vaccines and to prevent disruptions in supplies, but officials responsible for making the shots available say stockpiling vaccines is easier said than done. And also some problems aboard the International Space Station. A gyroscope for keeping the International Space Station stable in the right position has stopped working just hours after a new two-man crew arrived for a half-year stay. The breakdown of the American-made system left the space station with only two functioning gyroscopes, the minimum needed to control the massive complex. One of those units has exhibited current spikes and vibrations in recent months. Now, a fourth gyroscope broke 2 years ago. It was supposed to be replaced a year ago, but the Columbia accident put its delivery via space shuttle on indefinite hold. A NASA spokesperson has stressed that the crew members are not in jeopardy. He said the space station was cruising along fine with two gyroscopes, and that if one of those fails, Russian thrusters could be used for months to steer the outpost. Those thrusters, however, would use up precious fuel. Now, Linda Moulton Howe, as I mentioned, is aboard with us today and tomorrow. We'll tell you about tomorrow's program later on. Linda Moulton Howe, of course, is an Emmy Award-winning producer, investigative reporter, author, who goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges and to firsthand eyewitnesses of high strangeness. She's a graduate of Stanford University with a master's degree in communications. She has devoted her documentary film, television, and radio career to productions concerning science, medicine, and the environment. Of course, you hear her quite regularly here on Coast to Coast. Hi again, Linda.
It's great to be here, George.
Indeed. Stephen Quayle is the author of a primer for understanding bioterrorism called Breathe No Evil. It was first published in 1996. For the past 7 years, Quayle has articulated the need for Americans to be aware of bioterrorism and weapons of mass destruction. Upon publication of Breathe No Evil, Quayle upstaged mainstream media by years, spelling out detailed effects of bioterrorism. Steve continues to shout and scream about his concern for the massive loss of life due to lack of civil defense and preparedness in the public and private sectors. His website is stevequayle.com. Steve is a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. Stephen, welcome to the roundtable. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, George. I think it's going to be an absolutely fascinating night, and we're going to cover a lot of ground.
We sure are. Jim Mars is an award-winning journalist, has more than 30 years' experience with several Texas newspapers. He has taught a course on the JFK assassination at the University of Texas at Arlington since 1976. In 1999, he began teaching a course on UFOs, perhaps one of the first university-level UFO courses in the nation. Jim also investigated the U.S. Army's remote viewing program 3 years before it was publicly acknowledged by the CIA, and then produced Alien Agenda. In addition, his book, Rule by Secrecy, has been termed an underground bestseller. This book connects the secret societies with the ancient mysteries. Jim, welcome back to Coast, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine, and it's always good to be with you, George. And this sounds like this is going to shape up to be one of your premier programs.
Indeed, indeed. Alex Jones, a native Texan filmmaker, Alex Jones, has been promoting a libertarian Bill of Rights culture and fighting the police state for more than 10 years. His documentary films explore the architecture of the ruling elite's control system. Jones is an expert on secret societies, including the generational cult Skull and Bones. He has appeared on several national television programs and played a key role as himself in Richard Linklater's Waking Life. He has produced a number of documentary films and published several books related to the police state, secret societies, and government-sponsored terrorism. Alex, too, is quickly becoming, soon to be, a regular on Coast to Coast. Alex, welcome back again.
George, it's great to be here, and especially with all these wonderful people. I'm a big fan of all the work that all of you've done, and certainly this is a huge show for the country.
I think so, indeed, and that is why we are devoting now the entire program as we talk about secret societies. And Linda Moulton Howe, before we get a statement from Steve, Jim, and Alex, first of all, just about their thoughts on secret societies. When we told you that you were going to be aboard and you started doing some really heavy research into secret societies, one of your main functions, of course, for Coast to Coast, has been an investigative reporter. So when you started looking into this subject, what are some of the things you found?
It had started really in a way with crop circles because of the, many of the symbols that are found in the fields harken back to some of the ancient symbols and even sigils that connect into secret societies. But there are two themes that I'm really interested in, what the three gentlemen may have comments on that come to me and everything that I've been looking at. And one is that secret societies grew out of people trying not to get killed for having a certain kind of politically unacceptable belief. And at the sort of at the heart of all those politically unacceptable problems that created secret societies was whether reincarnation was real, what was the relationship to God, things of a spiritual nature, in which there have been so much death and war over secret societies. Mm-hmm. Now, the second part relates to something that I was told back in 1983 by one of the government people who crossed my path, and he said, our government, one of its greatest worries is who is walking around on this planet, looks human, but is not human. And that context was the non-human entity issue, and whether or not we are dealing with technology that can literally clone or make humans that they have control over. And of course, one of the sub-themes would be how far back Anunnaki Gurdjieff took in his own writings. He said that in the Lascaux caves in France, that he was convinced that they were drawing antlers on deers that were related to what we would call today occult hidden. That's what occult means. You have an occult in a star in astronomy when something passes in front of something else. So we're talking about hidden knowledge. And if Gurdjieff were right, then secret society belief would go back 40,000 years.
As we will find out, Linda, you are indeed right. It does go back a long, long time. Steve, you have been with us since the beginning. You have been with us since the horrible tragedy of 9/11. We have been on many programs together, sometimes expanding the shows in terms of the time that we've been on the air because of issues that are going on while we were on the air. When you hear the phrase, Stephen Quayle, secret societies, what does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, it means that it's hidden, as Linda has just stated, but there's always been a desire for mankind to achieve godhood in the spiritual realm. And when you're talking about 40,000-year-old cave paintings, whether it's in Altamira, Spain, Lascaux, France, and the caves in Australia, there's always a contact, there's always a point where mortals are being tampered with by the gods, little g, that have come to make an impression on them. So when I think of secret societies, I think of tampering, and I think of the passing on of power, providing humans with a pride and a hidden cache of knowledge that causes them to basically want to usurp authority over others. And that's what pretty much Alex's work and Jim's work and have detailed, that you can't get away from the connection that these people in the secret societies, the single word that denotes them all is control over their fellow man and destruction.
Jim Mars, what about you? Secret societies, what does that mean to you?
Well, first let me start off by saying that I think secret societies do go all the way back to the caveman era. I think early on, there's always been a desire, you know, in the early tribes, the hunters would go off and drink by themselves and share their hunting secrets. And so there's always been kind of this, let's get together and have a secret group. You know, and little kids all want to have their secret clubs. And that's okay. The problem is that we have secret societies today that, and this is what I did in my book, Rule by Secrecy, that can be traced all the way back through human history. And I believe that we just hit the nail on the head when we said that the commonality here is that trying to control people. Everything goes back to the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And you can trace the westward migration of peoples, at least in the Western world, up through the Caucasus, through Eastern Europe, over to the British Isles, down through Egypt, up through Greece, Rome, up through France, up to the British Isles, then over to the east coast of America, and during the 19th century, over to the west coast of America. And historians are all in agreement what caused this great migration. People were trying to escape political and religious tyranny. So somebody's been trying to get hold of us throughout history, and we've just kept moving away from them. And the problem now, George, is there's no place left to go.
Not at all. Alex Jones, you're batting cleanup for us tonight. Secret Society is something that you've devoted your career to. What does this mean to you?
Well, George, I agree with obviously with what the panel's been saying, but especially what Mr. Mars was saying. Going back to the witch doctors, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, they studied the stars, knew when the eclipse was coming. They would then con the rest of the tribe to give them special favors, to give them the best hut, to give them offerings of food, because they'd say, if you don't follow my orders, the serpent's going to eat the moon next week, and the people didn't keep track of the years, but the witch doctors with the secret society did. Then they wouldn't listen. Then he'd say, ooga booga, look, the moon or the sun just got eaten. Follow my orders. They'd all prostrate themselves, start begging, yes, master. Then he'd wave his hands, and suddenly the sun or moon would reappear. That's where the secret societies really got their, what's grown into their modern political power today. And take Bohemian Grove that we talked about last time on the show, a offshoot of the Skull and Bones death cults. In my film, Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove, on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, we've got some free video clips of that, of the satanic ceremony, like something out of Eyes Wide Shut. Here is world leaders today reenacting a 3,000-plus-year-old Canaanite ritual of human sacrifice. So they are obsessed with it. And then Linda had an important question. She said, well, why do we see secret societies in the Renaissance fighting against the power structure, wanting freedom? Well, what you're going to see is the establishment always trying to control revolutions, infiltrating groups that were doing that, actually controlling it. And on top of that, a lot of times your revolutionaries of today are really your wannabe aristocrats. We all have to be very careful of this. And when they get into power, they then set themselves up as tyrants. So really, modern secret societies, and by modern I mean the last 3,000 years, modern secret societies in the scale of them past the witch doctor phase, the more political complex grouping are nothing more than intelligence agencies. Secret society is the old term for intelligence agency, and that's why you see the members of Skull and Bones, according to even the History Channel, founding the CIA. The CIA, the NSA, this entire structure is an outgrowth of the already existing secret societies.
Yeah, have you ever wondered, Alex, what do these people want? They've got everything else. What do they want, Alex?
Well, that's really it, is that when you've got all the women and all the power and, you know, more gold than is in the hills, it's all about control. The globalists don't manufacture anything. They don't come up with ideas that really create. Their science is enslavement, serfdom. That's what they're masters of. That's their craft, is control, is manipulation, is giving us confusion. They have prayers where they pray that we have confusion, that they have enlightenment, that they have clarity. So what we need to have is our own clarity, because if we have the clarity, or what they call the light, then they will be defeated. They thrive when we're in darkness and they're in the light, hence the Illuminati, or the light of Lucifer. Now, we need the light of God, not the light of Lucifer. But see, they twist it around where, oh, we're the light bearers. You know, we're the angel of light. We're the good guys. Yes, but that means we're in the darkness. They're in their own sick light. That's a counterfeit.
Linda, when you got involved in this, and you've investigated a lot of different stories, a lot of them that affect our planet, not only weather-related and spiritual-related and extraterrestrially related, but now secret societies, men and women who have the control, primarily men, over what they dictate around this planet. Did you believe it at all when you first started looking into this?
Well, I think that the irony that has really struck me is that one of the biggest controversies which separated the Gnostics and the Cathars from the Christians, let's take one area where the secret societies just inflamed, was the issue of reincarnation. And the Cathars and the Gnostics, they accepted reincarnation as a reality, but not the Christians. And yet, Christ's greatest legacy is resurrection from death. So what is so different from reincarnation that secret societies would form and fight and kill each other and try to control each other over the moment of death and what happened?
And see, and we'll find out tonight that these secret societies got involved with everything. So in a moment, we'll be back with Jim Mars, Steve Quayle, Alex Jones, and Linda Moulton Howe. I'm George Norrie with this special roundtable edition, secret societies. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with a special edition roundtable discussion on secret societies with Alex Jones, Jim Mars, Stephen Quayle, Linda Moulton Howe, our special guest. And each one of our guests has been hand-selected because of their own specific expertise in this particular area. Stephen Quayle, this is something you've been looking at for a long, long time. Did you find it in the beginning very difficult for people to accept what you were trying to say?
Well, I think initially, yes, but as I was able to key into the stories of history and bring out, for instance, the stories of the giants and the stories of warfare in the heavens, people started to understand the place of conflict. And Alex brought up, I think, the key point, the position of Lucifer. As I started to understand the inhabitants of ancient civilizations and their quest for power, the path they wanted to take for eternal life, whether you're dealing with the Egyptians or you're dealing with the Zoroastrians, anybody that you were looking at wanted to escape death or be resurrected from it. And I think the most important issue in this is Lucifer's promise to men that if they buy off on his plan, they could be as gods. And this is something that every single secret society absolutely implies and passes on to their initiates who are brought up to the highest levels, that they themselves are gods. And when you look at the history of modern politics, ancient politics, what you see are people who believe they were handpicked by the gods. Now, I want to share something else that I think is really important in this discussion. All genetic engineering, whether it's with the help of the aliens or being directed by the aliens, is to cause men to be able to ultimately live forever and escape the judgment of the God of history, the God of the Old Testament, because, again, this is something that men have been told. You don't need to worry when you sign on with us, because our God's going to keep you going forever, and henceforth, not only reincarnation, but I would say this, animations. In other words, when you die or I die and the initiates who are hooked in with the black scientists, and by that I mean the color of their hearts, these guys are being promised, George, that they'll be able to have a new body, that they'll be able to have all of their collective memories downloaded into a chip, and that basically they can live forever and achieve more power and more wealth. It's kind of like the ultimate egotistical smorgasbord for hedonism.
Jim Mars, do you feel, though, that people in general, when they hear the word secret society, say, ah, come on, this isn't happening?
Oh, absolutely. But then they don't, I'm beginning to realize, George, that the average memory span of Americans is about 15 minutes. We don't seem to remember what's happened before. Back in the latter part of the first part of the last century, everyone could see, or at least the people who were looking could see, that there was evidence of secret societies, that there was secret movements taking place. Great people such as Woodrow Wilson, Disraeli, they've all written about this, but people decided it must be an international Jewish conspiracy. Well, of course, that's not right. And then that gave way after World War II to the international communist conspiracy. And all through the Cold War, anything that happened that was negative, it was the communists who were behind it. And now, of course, we realize that's not true, and yet the conspiracy goes on. What I was most impressed with in my study was that I started off with a hypothesis that all of the secret societies could be connected. And by golly, they can. And what we're talking about here, and I don't want to degrade the idea of the spirituality that's involved here, because
sure,
that is an important aspect, but I think also we're talking about science. We're talking about technology that existed in the ancient past, and bits and pieces of it have been passed along through secret societies, because after all, knowledge is indeed power. One example is the old Knights Templars, which of course created, were the forerunners of the Freemasons and all like that. When they came back from the Holy Land, they brought secrets back to France, secrets of architecture, secrets of medicine, secrets of all. They were the first to use magnetic compasses in their sailing ships. But most important, they created the Gothic cathedrals in Chartres and Paris and other places that had stained glass in them with such luminescence that modern science still does not quite understand how they managed to do that.
Alex Jones, how many groups are we talking about, or are there just a few that control the whole thing?
You know, that's a very good question. In fact, in some of the notes that I wrote for myself before this broadcast, I thought that was a key point to bring up, that people look at the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, the World Trade Organization, the IMF, the World Health Organization, then they hear about Skull and Bones, Bohemian Grove, whereas Skull and Bones and Bohemian Grove is basically the elites going to church. Then when they go out into business, the different mechanisms of the power structure, the different governmental bodies of the shadow government are embodied by all these different organizations. And so people think, well, there's all these different secret organizations and all these different, you know, secret globalist organizations pushing for world government. But if you look at the heads of the IMF, the World Bank, the heads of the Federal Reserve, the heads of all these groups, they're members of Bohemian Grove, they're members of Skull and Bones. If you're on the IMF board, you're on the World Bank board, you're also on, you know, on the Security Council of the UN. So it's just a few thousand people that are all members of the same organizations, all members of the same clubs. And what Steve was saying about the ultimate lust or prize that the secret societies offer their members, it's eternal life. And this is what's important, very key area here, because if you look at the Illuminati and others, they say you will be a god, you are a god, you know, do as thou wilt once you get into this position of power, you know, Lucifer's going to fill you, all of this is going to happen. But now when I look at globalist policy reports and white papers, they're saying finally we can have what the Egyptians never could have. Finally, we can use technology and cloning and downloading the human brain to give ourselves eternal life. But then the globalists say, but there's 6.25 billion people. We cannot allow the general public to have any of these technologies, so we've got to dumb them down, kind of stay the technological development on the technological plane that we're all on, and have these hidden secret spires of power, of advanced technology that is walled off behind the national security dictatorship, and then that will serve the elite and their families, and they're going to get to enjoy all of these new advanced systems for themselves. And then the globalists go further. They say, and so that we can enjoy all this technology for ourselves, we've got to get rid of 80 to 95% of the public. And Prince Philip has talked about this in published books. Ted Turner has. A lot of these big organizations are out there pushing this, and this is their ultimate rationale to engage in mass murder chemically, biologically, globally. The globalists killed 200 million people last century through their puppets of Nazism and communism and other movements, and now they're setting up other movements, the Islamic Jihad and others, to be their battering ram. And at one level, in the Hegelian dialectic, the radical Muslims create the crisis. Then Big Brother gets to come in with a police state in the name of countering them, when in truth the high-level secret societies actually control al-Qaeda and other groups. So it's pressure from below, pressure from above. And my last point is this. On InfoWars.com, special resource section for Coast to Coast listeners, we have a special section on Skull and Bones, Bohemian Grove, the globalist Illuminati language, Freemasonry, explaining how most Masons aren't aware of what's going on at the top. We have a bunch of key subsections that we just added today so people can go check out what's happening.
All right, very good.
You know, George, before the break, I was bringing up this distinction between resurrection and reincarnation, which was part of the battle back centuries ago, mm-hmm. between those like the Cathars and the Christians. And the point is there that when we jump up to 2004, and whether we're talking about Skull and Bones, Illuminati, or whoever is in the current modern day secret society, it seems to me that there's a theme that is coming from Stephen, from Alex, and from Jim. And what I'm also suggesting is that extension of life, or what happens at the moment of death, have always somehow been at the root of groups that sort of politicize themselves from each other, would kill each other over this issue of what we're talking about now in technology. There's a confluence in our modern mind, as Jim was saying, if you can extend life, that's power and control over the world, over anybody who cannot extend life.
You extend life, you control food, you control weather, you do it all.
And if there is something about the avatars of history, and specifically the Christ event, that had something to do with demonstrating to the masses somebody who could die and come back and walk around them, why did groups make resurrection different from reincarnation? And in that context, maybe to Jim, and well, to everybody, but I was thinking, Jim, you did a lot of research on the Merovingians, and I still think they play one of the most enigmatic and perhaps powerful behind-the-scene roles in our ancient history that may still have an effect today. And I wondered if you could talk about the Merovingians and their relationship to secret societies in this issue of the moment of death, life, and life after.
Well, it gets into some really esoteric stuff, but basically the Merovingians were the religious kings, the spiritual kings, the royal bloodlines that practiced service, that was trying to help everybody, okay? And, of course, the Merovingians, if you'll go into it deep enough, tried to claim that their lineage went back all the way to Jesus. There's still a lot of controversy about that, but the point is that they were there as servant kings. They were there to try to bring enlightenment and helpfulness, and that's why they were crushed by the early Roman church, because they presented a direct threat, as did the remnants of the Merovingians that became the Cathars, because they had beliefs and knowledge different from the Roman church. But let me say this about the when I was in Baptist Sunday school as a young kid, and we heard about Methuselah, who lived to be 850 years old, and other biblical patriarchs that lived 900, 1,000 years old. I remember thinking, well, that just can't be. That's got to be some kind of fairy story, you know? Nobody lives that long. But what we're finding out today through science is that with the knowledge of DNA, by perhaps uncapping the DNA strands, getting rid of the telomerase caps, you know, it is possible for us to totally regenerate every cell and continue to do that indefinitely. So all of a sudden, again, melding the two, you have technology now that is beginning to affirm the ancient stories.
And just a very short follow-up, Jim. Remember in Holy Blood, Holy Grail, in the appendices at the back of the book, there is a sentence in which they say, and the Merovingians were said to be of an extraterrestrial bloodline.
That's right. That's right.
And that bloodline went to royalty.
Kings, the first one said that he was the result of a marriage between basically a human woman and a reptilian.
And a reptilian, indeed. It goes way back. You know, Alex, one of my favorite movies, Eyes Wide Shut, you and I talked about it on your last appearance on Coast to Coast, you as well, Stephen Quayle. The more I continue to think about that movie, the more I realize just how bizarre these people really are. Stephen, these people are whacked out, aren't they?
Well, I consider them to be totally insane, but insane in a different way. The Merovingian bloodline is the seed of the Nephilim, and I don't agree with Linda on the Christ event. I think the whole situation in history is the position of who is Jesus. I'm not turning this into a religious discussion, but the point is that there are two seeds. There's the seed of the faithful, the redeemed, of the living God, and then there's the tampering seed, which you and I have done multiple shows on, George, and this idea that there's a heavenly seed, and I mean apart from Jesus Christ, meaning the fallen angels, of which Lucifer was the captain. So you can't get away from all of the technology and the even where we're at now in genetic engineering. Just like Jim was talking about, the Methuselah gene. The Methuselah gene has already been identified, but initially the bioscientists thought it was junk genes, and when they figured out that the telomerase and some of the other, if you will, genetic compounds that they thought had no importance, those were the very ones that turned out to be the ones that granted guys like Methuselah. Methuselah was 969 years old. So we've got a situation here where when I hear of the bloodlines, again, this has always been the goal. This is why Noah, the history in antiquity, teaches, including the Bible teaches, that he was perfect in his generation. In other words, Noah didn't have any sexual hanky-panky in his bloodline. And it seems like even when you get into the stories of Camelot, King Arthur, you get into the stories, if you go all the way back to the Babylonian epic of Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh was two-thirds god, one-third man. You cannot separate the dual lineage that is in history, and that dual lineage, especially as Alex points out in the occult nature of all of the secret societies, you cannot, and they believe that they are ultimately the children of Lucifer, and that they will bring the world under a Luciferic enlightenment, and that means that the Christians have got to go, the Jews have got to go, and the Muslims have got to go, and therefore they're the ones, in my opinion, that are triggering this whole scenario leading up to World War III, and in my opinion, we're so close to that that you can feel the breath on the back of your neck.
And Alex, how much is the control over the banking situation? Does this allow them to do what they need to do?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you look at OPEC and the oil, the Arabs really only get about 20% of the money. The big British and Dutch and French and U.S. banks are very good at keeping a low profile while blaming the Arabs. It's the same thing with the big banks. The globalists will put out this spin through their agents that, oh, it's a Jewish conspiracy, which is a total fraud, then making it a big racial and cultural issue, whereas in truth, the globalists are of every stripe and every race and every group working together, and they are bound together by a religious belief in Lucifer. And Steve and Jim were sitting there talking about how they think that they're God. I mean, look at the Total Information Awareness Network logo, an all-seeing eye radiating the earth. You know, Total Information Awareness. You talked about how they want control of the food, the weather, the religion, our minds. At every level, they're trying to create a counterfeit of what God, God of the Old Testament, did. And so we see that same thing today being replicated, and so of course the Illuminati claims that they are the bloodline of Jesus Christ. Of course they try to come out and say, I mean, that's what the Antichrist is going to say, and that's what Revelation 2,000 years ago said the Antichrist would do. And so now we see this developing and unfolding right now. These people are on total power trips. Throughout history, every time a leader gets total control, they flip out, they think they're God. You know, Caligula brought his horse into the Roman Senate and married it, and then made it the head of the Senate and kicked all the other senators out, and which way the horse's tail switched, he'd make decisions. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when Stanley Kubrick makes a film like Eyes Wide Shut, what he was telling us is, hey, folks, this is going on behind the scenes. Mozart, it was clearly killed over his last opera, The Magic Flute, exposing their activities. So they like to act like that they're all out helping and promoting love and renaissance in society, whereas in truth, they're trying to create a new dark age. And every time they get caught doing it, they claim, oh, no, we're actually trying to bring forward another renaissance. So every time we see them acting like that they're these good revolutionaries, in truth, they're trying to gain control of any revolution by the people against their tyranny.
Stay with us, because now you'll see how the roundtable discussion is really formatted, because when we come back at the top of the hour, there will be no directed questions. All five of us, part of the roundtable discussion, will just simply talk about secret societies and websites. They're all linked up with coasttocoastam.com. You've got Steve Quayle's websites. You've got a couple for Alex Jones. We'll tell you where you can listen to Alex. He's got his own show, Jim Mars and Linda Moulton Howe. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with a free-flowing discussion on secret societies on Coast to Coast AM. And in the last hour of the program, the roundtable discussion will expand, because you'll be part of it. We'll open up the phone lines, and Linda Moulton Howe, Jim Mars, Steve Quayle, Alex Jones will be here to answer your questions about secret societies. But now the roundtable discussion continues, and it's sort of going to be like at a dinner party where we're all sitting around chatting, except in this case, Steve and Quayle, I think I'm going to stick you with a check.
Well, that's fine, because I couldn't think of a group of people I'd rather buy dinner for than tonight.
Indeed. Why don't you start us off, Steve, with just one thing I wanted to just say, and let's just get rolling here. First of all, what do we say to people who think we're all paranoid and these things just don't exist?
Well, number one, I would challenge them to think, which may be something new, and I don't mean that to sound super sarcastic, but here's the deal. You cannot even begin to look at any aspect of society and not see the fact that there are people who believe they know better for other people. Now, we supposedly elect officials for that, but when you look into things like the skull and bones, right now it's a fascinating dilemma in this country. We were presented with two bonesmen running for president. And when you look at Yale and you look at Harvard and you look at the Ivy League schools that turn out, quote unquote, the world's leaders, you've got to ask yourself, if these are the brightest and the best that the world has to offer, why are we getting ready to go into what could possibly be World War III? And the answer to that is because these engineers of society want to kill off. I think that's the biggest point, George, that people stumble over. They want to believe that mankind is good, but they don't understand that beyond mankind there is a spiritual, wicked, evil force called Lucifer, Satan, and the Bible puts us right into this context of the very end of time, and this is how it would be playing out. You'll be playing out the light against the darkness, and all of the research, every single secret society, every single murder, every single intrigue, it all comes back to this. And that's where we're at right now. We are in, we are the stepchildren of a generational war going on, first in the heavens and then on earth. And, you know, Coast to Coast has dealt with a lot of the invisible realm becoming visible, whether it's ghosts, whether it's aliens. And again, I always I question those who say, well, we were made by the space gods. You would think that then you'd have to ask yourself who made them and why they're so caught up in the human sexuality of messing around with the genetic tampering with human beings. And again, as Alex has pointed out, as Jim has pointed out, as Linda's talking about crop circles play a big part in this, because what crop circles are showing us is not only in the language of mathematics and stellar positions, but it's kind of like those who have been here and messed us up are saying, guess what, we're coming back again, and this time we're going to do it in an all-out assault on humanity. And I believe that's what we're under, is a supernatural all-out assault on humanity, and I believe this is the very context of the Bible that places us into in the book of Revelation.
Steve, I've been reading a book called The Occult Conspiracy by Michael Howard. He's a British researcher of secret societies, and it is a 1989 book, and he looked at the whole globe and looking at secret societies for centuries. And it is out of this that these issues having to do with reincarnation versus resurrection, and even the issue of the cross, in which there were secret societies who rejected the cross as being evil because it was used as a tool of torture, and that these division lines were drawn. And I wanted to know, since the Cathars and the, versus the Christians ended up, there was a terrible bloody massacre over this issue of resurrection versus reincarnation and the cross, what is your own distinction between reincarnation and resurrection?
Well, from the standpoint, resurrection, to me, is totally set apart from reincarnation. To reincarnate means to become embodied again in an, either a same form or a higher form, or in many cases, a lower form. To reincarnate, I take that as opposed to resurrection. Resurrection is when the individual comes back in his same body, i.e. Jesus was bodily resurrected. At the time of Jesus' resurrection, even historians, non-Christians, talked about the graves of those who had been sleeping in the ground or dead coming alive and going and showing themselves alive in Jerusalem.
Yes, that was God showing that I'm in control, I have power over hell and death, and I have the keys. But going back to George's question of just a few minutes ago, what do we say to people that can't believe this? Well, they arrested Galileo for saying that the world was round, and he spent the last 7 years of his life on house arrest, but then overnight people were kooks for saying that it was flat. And look, I mean, I've been talking about skull and bones for 10 years, and I'm kind of a, you know, spring chicken when it comes to all this. People have been talking about it for, you know, since it was founded in 1832, and it's just one chapter. chapter 322 of the Illuminati. So, I mean, 5-6 years ago, I'd be talking about Skull and Bones, and people would call me or email me or write me and say, you're a nut. You know, George Bush doesn't get in the coffin, and they don't do these rituals, and it doesn't exist. Now it's out in the news every day that, okay, John Forbes Kerry, George W. Bush, their family lines going back, you know, they're members of the secret society, they're cousins. And here's the problem. It's not just some fraternity. This is an elite secret society where they swear an oath to each other above all other oaths, and they admittedly set up Skull and Bones to overthrow this country, to set up a dictatorship through the presidency. I mean, there were articles about this 150 years ago. And so when we look at secret societies, the real elite secret societies, is that they are nothing but secret intelligence agencies to maintain and expand power. And look, if Skull and Bones is just some happy-go-lucky fraternity, you know, for 21-year-olds in college, juniors and seniors in college at Yale, why then on Meet the Press, now twice Kerry's been asked about it, he says he won't talk about it. I mean, there's discussions of him walking off shows if they continue to ask the questions. Why won't Bush talk about it? Because this is deadly serious, and it's not just a fraternity, because as old men, they go to Bohemian Grove, which is a offshoot of this same system, and they go there and they engage in these rituals because I've been there, I videotaped them doing it at the Bohemian Grove. So for everybody out there, this is real. This is happening. The globalists are obsessed with dark occult rituals, with the dark side, and we have to face this. But see, they laugh at us. They call us the profane. They're the initiates. We're the stupid, profane masses. And we don't mean profane, you know, like some of the people on the radio. What we mean is that they call us profane because we are in the darkness, because they've convinced us to not even look under the rock and see what they're really doing. So it's so important for everybody to open up their minds, to at least listen to what we're saying, and to go to Coast to Coast AM and look at the resources there and look at the facts, because there can be debate about space aliens all day long. You know, are they here? You know, what's happening? But there's no debate about secret societies. And secret societies, the top elite secret societies, as the host has said, as both the other guests have said, secret societies at the top are obsessed with gods, giving them special power, making them gods. They're obsessed with this eternal life. They're totally obsessed with what happened back in Genesis, with these scientists tinkering with the genetics, and they say that they are now coming back with power to do this yet again. And the question is, will God destroy the earth again like he did with water, but this time with fire, to destroy that evil seed and to stop it from taking total control?
Well, say, Alex, let me ask you this. What do you think the odds are that the two men running for president of the United States this year, John Kerry and George W. Bush, are just happen to be blood relations to the Windsor family that is the royalty of England, and there, of course, were not English to begin with. They were the Mountbattens, and then before that, the Battenbergs.
Well, they were the Saxe-Coburgers.
Germany, and you've got these same bloodlines running through history. We all know that Hitler was, you know, obsessed with the idea of the Aryan bloodline, the pure bloodline, but most people have forgotten or don't know that the Caesars and the Pharaohs and all the way back through history, there's been this obsession with this whoever has the most pure bloodline.
Jim, you're absolutely on target. In fact, mainstream historical works about Hitler, he had a secret society that believed that he was Christ, and some of the top Nazi generals, the doctors would take his blood, and they would make little sausages out of it, and they would have a blasphemous wafer and blood with Hitler, and it goes back to the whole Merovingian, you know, he's really the bloodline of Jesus. Over and over again, we see him doing this. And
exactly.
You
mentioned about that sometimes it becomes a little bit dangerous trying to talk about this. You mentioned how Beethoven didn't last very long, but I might point out that Stanley Kubrick didn't live very much longer after he made Eyes Wide Shut.
Well, I remember seeing the article where he was having a big argument with the production company and with the people. They were demanding that he cut something out. He said, I'm not going to shorten this film. And then a day later, he dies of a heart attack, and suddenly they go in and hack off 35 minutes of the film. They didn't want us to see something.
Yeah, he didn't even finish it, did he, Alex? They had to bring somebody in to finish the editing, didn't they?
Well, actually, exactly. They had done the shooting, but because they hacked off 30 minutes, it didn't make sense, so they had to come in and do some more shooting, and a lot of evidence they killed him. Going back to Mozart, who was a high-level Mason, got into the Illuminati because he thought they were good, found out they were bad, then he wrote this big symphony about it, then told his family that they're going to kill me over this. I'm about to die, and a few days later, he did die of obvious poisoning.
It is dangerous, and for example, most people don't realize that the very first third party in the United States was back in the early 1800s, and it was the Anti-Masonic Party death of Captain Morgan.
And if I could jump in here a second, Skull and Bones didn't form in the United States until 1832, and it was a link to a German group in
chapter 322.
Okay, and this raises continually this question in my mind. We always have sort of in the background this question, whether you're talking about Anunnaki or Merovingian, has there been a non-human aspect to these secret societies, and that the reason that there's been secrecy on these major issues that we're talking about, because there is something that is fighting itself through humans.
You and I have talked about that, and you know that I'm pretty much in agreement with that, but just for the whole general radio audience, what I'd like to point out is it disturbs me greatly that the President of the United States, who is supposed to be our Commander-in-Chief and our Chief Executive Officer, has taken an oath to a secret society founded in Germany that supersedes his oath to the Constitution to the people of the United States.
By the way,
let me add, mockery out of democracy.
Let me add something to that here in our Constitutional Republic. Let me add something because, again, I have researched Bohemian Grove. We have their own annals posted on the website, mainstream news articles. Bohemian Grove was founded by the Skull and Bones Club, founded out of Germany. And they admit in their own annals, Helmut Schmidt, I talked about this last time, the German chancellor back in the 80s, he wrote in his own autobiography, he said, look, I'm Trilateral Commission, I'm CFR, I'm Bilderberg Group. He says in his own autobiography, we run the world, but he said, my favorite place to engage in our druidic rituals is the Bohemian Grove. He said, of course it was founded out of Germany, and of course we have our own groves in Germany, but my favorite place to do the rituals, and this is in his own book, folks, it's in my film, you know, close-ups of the text of the book, Men in Power, a Political Retrospective by Helmut Schmidt. So it's not debatable. And going back to the House of Windsor, that's like a brand name. They're the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas, a German family, and people can't believe this, but Reuters even admits that George W. Bush, John Forbes Kerry, William Jefferson Clinton, all of them are very close relations to the House of Windsor, and Bush and Kerry are actually distant cousins of the Queen of England. So it's happening yet again in our face that we have these people basically ruling over us, and the point Jim makes is so central here, because in our face, we have people who are part of the Order of Death, that's the real name of Skull and Bones, who've sworn an oath to overthrow this country, their cousins, and this is the supposed choice we have? This is a rigged game.
Not to mention the new computer voting machines that can be hacked with $10 worth of software.
That don't work.
And the CIA fluttering around, covertly owning some of the companies, convicted computer crimes, people as vice presidents of the company. Look, right here in Austin, they just had an election, and they had all these, quote, mistakes. People who were behind in the polls but were establishment candidates suddenly won by great margins. It's very scary.
But what is the larger picture? I mean, if you say that secret societies have had a really long hold on the, well, at least the last 5,000 years and maybe longer, I'm curious among the three of you what you think the likelihood is that what's been pulling the strings through this sort of control mechanism of secret societies is actually a bigger box of non-human.
It's called greed. Nah, not non-human, Linz. It's greed. That's what it is. It's pure and simple greed.
I'm curious what...
Well, it's more than greed. It's control. They've already got all the money and the gold and the everything anybody could ever want. This was mentioned earlier in the program. They're after total control. And by the way, here's my question. Let's just look at it this way. Let's assume that they're really successful. And they do realize the age-old dream of controlling the world. They have one world government, one world technology, one world banking, one world military, one world transportation. Now, my question is, what is our guarantee that some new Hitler-like tyrant won't gain control over
that
mechanism? And we, not only do we not have any guarantee, we're really not even supposed to be talking about all this.
That's the point. That's the point, is that a lot of the globalists and their minions rationalize that it's a dangerous world, somebody's got to be in control of it, so we've got to have this world government. But then you look at who's in control of the world government, they're a bunch of inbred, power-mad control freaks, and all they talk about in their public policy reports is how they're going to have all the life extension technologies for themselves and how they can't wait to have designer bioweapons to kill 80-plus percent of us. Race-specific bioweapons, Jane's Weapons Publications admits that they're creating thousands of gallons of this garbage to even kill certain races. Dick Cheney in Rebuilding America's Defenses, the PNAC document of September 2000, it's on Infowars.com, direct link to their website, says that we need to legitimize the use of race-specific bioweapons in the media. The people in the White House are openly talking about legitimizing the use of race-specific bioweapons, and then magically, suddenly, all over the world, from Russia to Australia to the U.S., all these microbiologists in key areas of the infrastructure are dropping dead. That scares the living daylights out of me, Steve. Oh.
Steve, where do you think that the current world, the chaos that we're in, and if there are secret societies behind what is happening now, where would you extend this current timeline going forward from your point of view?
Well, from my point of view, we're at the point where except the days would be short and there'd be no flesh left alive. And I want to deal with your question. I believe non-human intelligence is what the Rothschilds and everybody that Alex has talked about in all of his videos and everything that Jim has written about. These guys basically pay allegiance to a non-human entity called Lucifer. I believe that there are specific demons. A demon is a disembodied spirit. George and I, we've talked about that a lot.
And I agree with that. I can believe that, Steve, that they're looking toward Lucifer.
By the way, they admit that it's Skull and Bones. They channel, quote, Lucifer. In the London Guardian 2 weeks ago, Tony Blair was saying that he channels the light again. And this is very serious. So even if you don't believe in religion or spirituality, listeners, the elite does, and they worship the Dark One.
Right, and I think if I can jump in, here's the problem there with channeling, okay? And I ran into this when I researched the remote viewing, which, of course, was studied by the CIA and used and developed by our own United States Army. And the people in there who were utilizing this technology of remote viewing explained to me that if you go out and remote view something, that's one thing. You send your mind out, you look at things, okay, you're still you. But if you're channeling, you are opening yourself up, and there is no guarantee what's going to come in.
Well, and here we are in the middle of record-setting gasoline prices. Terrorism seems rampant everywhere. Tragedies occurring all over this planet. Is it designed? Is it planned? Or does it just happen because of a small group of hateful people? We'll be back in a moment with our roundtable discussion with Alex Jones, Stephen Quayle, Jim Mars, and Linda Moltenhau. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Now let's take just a few minutes as we sit around this roundtable discussion before we go back and talk about secret societies to let our guests talk a little bit about what they do and, of course, their websites and where you can track some of the very, very historical work they do. Stephen Quayle, you first, of course.
Well, for the past 25 years, I've been studying ancient civilizations, researching original papers, original manuscripts, tracking down artifacts, tracking down the involvement of, let's say, secret groups or members of societies that want to cover up our ancient past as it relates specifically to giants. I've had the good encounters with, I've had some really fabulous encounters with people who have gotten consciences over the years and wanted to quote-unquote spill their guts to let the people of this country know what's really going on. Some of them are still alive. Unfortunately, some of them have been murdered. I've been tracking the biological and chemical weapons development program for over two decades. Also, the nuclear weapons, especially backpack suitcase nukes, radioactive materials, biological materials on the black market, and also tying it in pretty much, and the basis of all this has been my love for the Old Testament and the New Testament, and I believe God's specific revelations to mankind is exactly how the end times that we're living in now are going to play out. And so it's been a quest for knowledge, a quest for truth, trying to warn people, because I believe that the biggest word missing in this planet is the word love. And it's fascinating because you don't hear the word love in the Bohemian Grove. You don't hear it. You don't even see it. And I'm not talking about erotic love or sexuality. I'm talking about an incredible love that the creator of the universe, the living God, has for his creation. And so it's been my desire and my goal and my passion that as people would see the truth or hopefully be able to at least hear the truth, they might see that there's another, a good ending to history. I'm one of those guys that likes to see good endings in movies, and I believe that as people move towards knowing the truth, that the power of deception is broken over their lives. Saying that, people also have to recognize that there's a lot of banter going on. Is Jesus just an earthly man? I believe Jesus is a son of God, and I had a supernatural encounter with him as a pagan early in my life. And so that sort of put me on a pathway of saying, okay, there's something here that men are afraid of, and I'm talking about the men that rule the world. And so when I began to understand their hatred for spirituality and the love of God and the redemption of God, it started me on this a fast pace to try and get to the truth, because I believe we're running out of time, and it's my conviction that we are so close to having major events transpire that will shape the future of this world in such a bad way that literally if the days weren't shortened, there would be no flesh alive left alive. But as Jesus said, the days are going to be shortened for the elect's sake. And I also believe that the invisible realms that we've touched on, that we talk about, that people write about, are going to become visible as mankind in their technological decadence continues to fool around in realms they do not understand, but they've been given this illusory bait that we're going to open up literally the portals and the gates of hell. And I believe that most people are going to now be confronted with supernatural events in their lives that they're going to be unable to explain through the common logic or the common thought process of a secular science.
And through your website, how do people track you, Stephen?
Well, they can go to www.stevequayle.com, Q-U-A-Y-L-E.com, and we post a lot of information there. I have actually two divisions of the website, contemporary terrorism and events that are taking place, and then the ancient antiquity stuff is on the giant site, so they can take their pick or choose what stream they want to go to.
Jim Marsh, how did you get into this field, and how can people track your work?
Well, you know what? Actually, being down here in Texas back in the 50s, there was a lot of John Birch activity. Dallas was a very conservative place, and I would read about the Council on Foreign Relations, and of course this was long before the Trilateral Commission, but I would read about all of that and the Illuminati, and I felt like most people who were probably listening to this program, it's like, is this even real? Did these things really exist? And if they do exist, do they actually exert any power, or is it just kind of a good old boy network or some kind of fraternity? And so I kept waiting for someone to write a book that was credible and well-sourced and put it all together and said, here they all are and here's where it all came from. And it never happened, so I finally did it myself with Rule by Secrecy. And you said earlier, George, that the roots go deep, and you're absolutely right. Here's a 1782 letter written by George Washington, the father of our country, and he says, "It was not my intention to doubt that the doctrines of the Illuminati had not spread in the United States. On the contrary, no one is more fully satisfied of this fact than I am." So this is nothing new. It's just that these people, with their wealth and their power, they gain such control over the mass media that it does seem like conspiracy theorists hollering at the fringe, because you can, it's amazing that as much information is out now as is.
Linda Moulton, let's get your websites out, Jim.
My website, by the way, has been down for about a week as I changed servers and worked out a few problems, but it is now back today, and that is Jim Marrs, that's with two R's, JimMarrs.com. And I hope in the very, very coming days to be posting a lot of interesting things. There's some interesting information that's coming up now about things that are going on right now and the connections into this very topics that we're talking about tonight.
Indeed. Linda, how did you get involved in this facet?
I did not know how manipulated and suppressed the media could be until I started trying to get to the bottom of the worldwide animal mutilation mystery in the fall of 79. And here we are about 25 years later, and I've done books and documentaries and television about this issue of government knowledge and cover-up, and have come to understand how easy it is to keep the media and the public at an arm's length distance from subjects that governments don't want to be politically acceptable. And this is one of the reasons why I love being able to do Coast to Coast Radio, and started my website, www.earthfiles.com, which is a focus on science and environment and real X-Files, with this idea in mind that every day, whether it is in real X-Files or science and the environment, there are major stories, major changes that are happening on this planet all the time, and we're talking about an important influence tonight, but they are not covered in any depth whatsoever on the 6 o'clock news. And what I'm trying to do at earthfiles.com and in my reporting at Coast to Coast AM is to go in-depth wherever I can in subjects that seem to me to be very important to this fast-changing world that we're on, whatever all the forces are, and keep reporting as deeply as I can on subjects that sometimes are not politically acceptable, but I think are valuable. So I hope a lot of Coast listeners will go to www.earthfiles.com.
Your turn, Mr. Jones.
Well, I mean, I agree with Linda. I want to thank you, George, and the great folks at Coast to Coast for having the courage to have myself and others here on the one of the biggest broadcasts in the country and the world. I was going to college, and my textbook said the New World Order is good, turning your guns in is good, America's bad, the family's bad. And then I watched the nightly news, and they'd say extremist crazies say this. It doesn't exist. There's not a New World Order. Even conservative leaders would say this. And then I started reading the publications of the CFR and the Trilateral Commission, the public stuff. And so I said, well, I'll just go down and try to get a little cable show and then a radio show. And then I started making documentary films in 1997. And what Steve said earlier about, you know, the Bohemian Grove doesn't have any love, the ritual they do that we caught on tape in my film Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove is about not having care, about not having a conscience. They do this mock sacrifice to exercise their conscience. It is a ritual to rob and rule over us, and they say this. And so I want to challenge everybody out there to research what I'm saying. I want to challenge them to go to InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com and to get my documentary films, which I authorize people to make copies of. I mean, you're free to make copies of the films, folks. The globalist number one tool is fear, not love. They love to blow things up. They love to create terror groups. They love to create Hitlers and Stalins and Maos and Bin Ladens to scare us into submission. And my film, 9/11, The Road to Tyranny, and, of course, The Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove really exposed this, and so people can simply go to InfoWars.com, or they can call toll-free, and people are there right now, 1-888-253-3139. That's 888-253-3139. And if people get the films and make 10 copies of them and give them to their pastors, their rabbis, their neighbors, their local talk show host, people can see the Real Eyes Wide Shut going on in plain view, and then they could start. I mean, look, 10 years ago, I was ignorant to this. Their own propaganda in college woke me up. And you know, 5 years ago, people wouldn't believe me, about half of them. Now I find very few people that aren't awakening. This awakening, this new renaissance, is happening. This revealing is happening, and the globalists can't stop it. That's why they're scared right now. That's why they're moving so fast to try to oppress us and dumb us down and to carry out terror attacks to scare us back onto the reservation. They know that our consciousness is rising, and by that I don't mean that as some, you know, new age mumbo jumbo. What I mean is that people's real consciousness, their awareness at a very deep level, they're very tuned in right now to the truth. I have never seen such an awakening taking place, so I beg people to be part of this awakening and tell people about this broadcast.
And you, of course, Alex, have your own radio show. You better not be on when I'm on the air, but where can people where can people hear you?
Well, no, George, I'm not on while you're on. I'm on during the day. And, again, people can find out more at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. And I think I have a little syndicated show that I think is about 2% of what yours is, but I reach millions of people, and we do reach out. And, of course, my listeners are all your listeners, and every day people call in discussing all the wonderful, enlightening topics that you bring forward.
Well, say, Alex, don't you think that, because I agree with you, I think there's more and more people waking up, but don't you think that there's a danger there that's going to force these controlling elites to move even faster and harder?
Well, I absolutely agree with you. Look, they're in a catch-22. The globalists created Al-Qaeda and others, the shadowy group way above Bush and the rest of them, way above Clinton, way above Kerry. And it's what Dr. Tanya Karajny of the Russian top economist for Putin said weeks before 9/11, that, you know, America's about to be attacked in their financial center. There's this $300 trillion group controlling all of it, and just that happened. And so they plan to have more big terror attacks after 9/11 to further ratchet down the police state, because the police state isn't for Al-Qaeda, it's for the citizens. And so because of the awakening that's happened, they have been stunned by it, but at the same time, it's a catch-22. I believe that's going to force them to go ahead and launch attacks, regardless of the fact that we're waking up to them, especially an Internet attack to, again, be blamed on terrorists. The globalists desperately want to shut down what we're doing because, again, this isn't hype. 5 years ago, I tell you, people are all stupid. They're never going to wake up. I have never seen such an awakening as is taking place right now, but the globalists have got to calculate, and they've got to talk to their think tank social engineers, and they've got to listen to them, because I know their social engineers are telling them, even on their own public documents, to back off, that we're waking up. But what we've seen is the elite doesn't care. As part of this power mad power trip, they can't stop. They're not going to stop. So I think you're going to see an escalation, but I think that that's finally going to bring them down. Their arrogance, just like the Emperor, Return of the Jedi, and the Death Star, their arrogance is what's going to bring them down.
And they aren't the only pawns on the chessboard. I think that when you look into secret societies throughout history, there have been some who were focused around trying to bring love and peace and everything that would be what we fantasize about a perfect world. And today, would you all say that as you've got forces of chaos that are gathering around what you've just outlined, Alex and Jim, but there are other forces at work that are highly positive that are resisting, and that's part of this chaos that we're all feeling?
Well, that's just the law of physics, that every action creates an equal or greater reaction. And absolutely, I've said many times that the New World Order is the greatest recruiter of people to resist them, because the more they squeeze, the more they attack, the more they prod, the more resistance that they begin to generate.
Well, this is just simply the old ancient historic, and this is what Steve was talking about, the struggle between light and dark. And I might point out that in my research, I find that in ancient times, when they referred to light and dark, what they were actually talking about was knowledge versus ignorance.
Well, that's it. And the people perish for lack of knowledge. And so what you have is this cycle, and we're entering a very decadent, dangerous, destructive cycle as the elite tries to suppress the people from going to the next level. God wants us to be creative. He wants us to be happy. He wants us to be, you know, absolutely. absolutely empowered, and the elite is threatened by that. They're threatened by us being intelligent. They're threatened by us being informed. They're threatened by us, you know, trying to look behind the curtain. And I'm here to tell the elite, you have already failed. I have seen the awakening all across this country. You are failing, and no matter what you do, you're coming down.
And these symbols, the ancient symbols, both in geometry and in others, like sigils, that have been associated with secret societies that had to communicate with each other in code, that related to number systems, that related to letters, so they could communicate. It seems so relevant today to bring up the fact that the hexagram, the overlaid star that we associate today with Israel, when you study, where was the origin of
that? The Star of Solomon.
The Star of Solomon, and Gershov Scholem did research about this at the beginning of the 20th century as a Hebrew, looking back into the history of that symbol, and found that it went all the way back to Arab magic, and it was used to...
Wait, Alex. Yeah.
It was used to deflect evil. And what a perfect full circle in this conversation to realize that we are dealing at a time when the Middle East is exploding and almost taking the whole world with it, and that one of those symbols is the hexagram that goes back to Arabic magic to deflect evil.
Well, you know, as we come right up, we will be right back with our guests. The top of the hour is already upon us. There was a picture that the Pentagon is not very happy with, posted on a website. Dozens of photographs of American war dead arriving at the nation's largest military mortuary in Dover, Delaware. I want to get the reaction of those at our roundtable discussion, whether those pictures should have been shown or not, and whether the government has a right to say, we don't want you to show those pictures. And how does that tie in then to this globalism, to this control of the Illuminati, of the secret societies? And so what can you do about it, too? We'll find out. We'll get the reaction from our roundtable discussion panelists. Linda Moulton Howe, you just looked at a series of photographs on the Internet that are pretty emotional photographs. These are photographs, number of photographs of coffins draped in American flags of our fighting men and women who died. Now, I wrestled with this, Linda and Jim and Steve and Alex, all day. And I tried to take the perspective of which I could not even get close of a parent, of a father, for example, whose son, whose daughter might have died in Iraq. And I looked at those pictures of soldiers dead in a coffin draped with an American flag, and I tried to say to myself, okay, if you were that parent, would this bother you if you saw that? Linda, I want to get your reaction. First of all, as a journalist, the fact that the Pentagon does not want these pictures shown, and yet they are, they had to release them. Tell me what you feel about that.
It's more suppression and control, and it makes me angry as an American citizen, as a journalist, and stepping into the shoes of any parent, because the bodies are physical evidence of what is happening in Iraq to our own who have gone there and died in whatever is going to be the end result of our preemptive strike in Iraq, so to speak. And the sadness of this is that these people in those flag-draped coffins, in those photos that you have just shown me, they deserve all of our honor. Not suppression, not trying to reduce the body count. They deserve our honor.
Jim Mars?
Yeah.
Jim Mars, this picture illustrates to me the sadness of war. It does not take away at all from the heroism of the men and women who died over there.
Not at all.
As a
former member of the United States Army with an honorable discharge, I have the highest regard for our men and women who serve this nation, and I think they deserve better than a government who will not even admit to the true battle casualties or the true casualties and effects of this war, and then try to prohibit photographs simply of flag draped coffins. Let me point out that when photography first began in the middle 1800s, we were in the middle of the war between the states, and the American public was subjected to battlefields with dead and mutilated bodies lying all over the field, and this was our first experience with photography in war. World War One, World War Two, we actually saw dead American bodies. And it only began to change with Vietnam because the ruling elite realized that visual depictions of actual battlefield conditions turned people against war, and they began to sanitize the whole thing. Gulf War was the same way. They held all the reporters in the tent and told them what was going on, just like today in the crime reporting. You have to keep back 12 city blocks by the yellow tape, and then some spokesman comes to tell you what's going on. Now, I realize we live in a highly sanitized society today. We don't have the direct contact with death, suffering, with the reality of life and death. But to say that we can't see flag-draped coffins coming back, I think it's absolutely incredible that the American people would even tolerate such an idea.
Stephen Quayle, you have a daughter who is at the age that if she wanted to have volunteered for the military, she would have been there right now. How does this whole issue strike home with you?
I think immediately, George, of the mothers and the daughters and the children and the wives and the husbands. I get it all almost like a burst. And to be honest with you, I couldn't keep a dry eye. It broke my heart. But even more insidious than that is the fact that from the beginning of these wars, we were told that you, the American people, don't have the right to know the truth. You remember when it was even promoted that we might have a Department of Defense organization called the Department of Disinformation, and the people flipped out on that and said, no way. Well, I maintain we still have a Department of Disinformation. There's a war going on in the Pentagon, I'm told, by some very brave and some very, very valiant men who would lay down their life for this country in an instant. But they said, and this is a scary thought, they said 90% now of the Pentagon is New World Order, and they're seeing to it that the other 10% either are early outed or that they end up murdered, or, and this is really a hard statement to make, but they end up dead before their time. So I think that this is a quintessential representation of the whole lying facade matrix madness that we're exposed to. And again, this is the thing that we all do. Jim does it. I do it. Alex does it. Linda does it. We're trying to show that there's a different world out there far from what we're presented. And I got to tell you this. I consider the mainstream press vomit brokers, okay? They're vomit brokers. All they do is regurgitate the world through their eyes. And this goes right along with David Rockefeller and his address to a trilateral commission meeting. He said this: we're grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications who directors have attended our meetings and respected the promises of discretion put in secrecy for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for a new world order if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. In other words, thanks a lot, guys, for covering up what we've done to set up the New World Order. This is a clear example of it, and I believe it behooves every single veteran, every single mother, father, daughter, brother, sister of those who have loved ones in the military or are now seeing their bodies coming home in aluminum flag-draped coffins to scream like they've never screamed before.
Alex Jones, a disabled Army veteran, writes me just moments ago saying that those who show the pictures dishonor those heroes by showing the photographs of their coffins, saying shame, shame, shame. Do you see that?
Well, let me respond to that, because, I mean, so many thoughts came up here listening to Linda and Steve and Mr. Mars. On Infowars.com, we've written an article about this. We posted these photos yesterday, and there's over 300 of them out there. And our troops supposedly are fighting for freedom, the freedom of the press, the freedom of the First Amendment. And I've studied the Russians. In Afghanistan, they wouldn't allow any photos of coffins. They would tell families the gravestone can't say that he died in combat, that he was a hero. You can't tell anybody. And the mere fact that they are now changing the policy, this just changed in 1993. It was actually Bill Clinton changed the policy to where they didn't allow the press in to photograph the coffins, but the press would always get at the airport and shoot over the fence. Now they put up these big blue curtains so you can't see it. And I have the confirmed news reports that a lot more of our men and women in uniform have died than what we're hearing. The numbers are conservatively double in Afghanistan and now in Iraq. And so this is a great example of that they're obviously doing that they don't want us to see the photos. Now, through a Freedom of Information Act request, this gentleman was able to get these. Now the Pentagon's going back and saying, take them down. This is what America's all about, is being able to see the coffins. They've even gone out to Arlington Cemetery and told the media to stay back. They don't want them getting video from 200 yards away of a flag-draped coffin going into the ground. So America is all about the First Amendment, and my cousin who's fighting over there believes he's fighting for freedom. So the question is, why then is our government engaging in Saddam-like activities of trying to suppress free speech and news? And look, this is important for people to understand who think this is disgracing the troops. This allows...
And there are some, Alex, that believe that. I mean, a matter of fact, another fast blast comes in that says, you are all wrong, the bodies are not for public display.
Okay, this is not the bodies.
Not the bodies. All we're seeing is coffins with flags on it. Come on.
This is not the bodies. These are coffins draped, and it's very dangerous to allow the government to get in the position of not allowing us to know the numbers of the dead or to see the images of their flag-draped coffins. And Steve brought up the Pentagon Office of Strategic Information. 3 years ago, they said in a press release, we're going to lie to you for your own good. And then their next press release was, oh, no, we're not going to do that now. Well, that was their first lie. We've had the Pentagon plant hundreds of fake letters from troops with fake signatures in newspapers about how much they love the war. We've had a Pentagon who creates fake weapons dossiers and reports on fake mass graves and mobile weapons trucks that were for pumping up hydrogen balloons. So this is very serious. And for those that don't get this, they should move to Russia or China. America is about honoring our troops and honoring the flag by honoring the spirit of it, which is the Bill of Rights, including the First Amendment. And having the feds involved in trying to intimidate people into not having these photos is an absolute disgrace, and is destroying the heart and soul of America. You're killing America when you sit there and say that we shouldn't show these photos.
Today, our government in Iraq said that they would now consider bringing Ba'ath party members, these are Saddam Hussein's party members, into the fold, into the Iraqi government when the time comes.
They already have.
And one of their statements were that there are a lot of innocent Iraqis who were forced to be members of the Ba'ath Party. I guess I could understand a little bit of that. Could anybody?
Well, Mr. Chalibi, who's running things, was the top torture expert for the Shah of Iran. He's a convicted bank robber stealing $300 million from our ally, Jordan. This is the guy that they have running things in Iraq for Halliburton, literally with an iron fist, and now bring back the ruthless CIA install from 1979. Ba'ath Party is just a total and complete fraud. And they're talking about how it's democracy over there. Our government appointed 324-member council. They're going to appoint a new council June 3rd. George, if I come to your house, and this is an analogy, and point a gun at you and say, your neighbor is going to be your boss now, this is democracy, and I appoint your boss, that's not democracy, and they're telling us that this is so-called democracy? I mean, this is the biggest fraud I've ever seen in my life. But look, Iraq was meant to be a quagmire. The UN's going to come in later as the good cop. This whole thing is a setup. We have their own white papers on it, and our troops are going to be chewed up in the process. Vietnam was a 10-year meat grinder designed the same way. It's for weapons sales, it's for oil, and it's about a political diversion while they turn America into a police state.
And if the situation in Iraq is headed toward full-scale civil war with multiple parties, probably not just two, in this whole big context of secret societies who have ulterior motives, good and bad, is there anyone that you all would see would be served by civil war besides Osama bin Laden?
Absolutely. The globalists have said, 2 years before the Iraq war, they put out public white papers. That's what I do. I stay up till 2 in the morning almost every night reading globalist white papers, their plans, what they're saying, what they're doing. They know the general public never goes and reads it. It's like Steve reading some of the public minutes of a trilateral commission meeting back in the 70s. They openly talk about the House of New World Order, taking our freedoms, all of this. And they said that we'll send in America, they'll get blown to bits, we'll intentionally have policies that cause resistance, then we'll take away those policies, bring in the UN, and make them look like the good guys. So the globalists are making America look bad to the world by setting this up to where we're going to fail. Then they'll take the domestic breakdown.
Oh, who did we lose there?
Alex?
I'm right there.
Alex, is there Steve? You with us? Aha, Steve is the
Jim?
One that went. Jim, are you with us?
I'm still hanging in there. Alex is saying the same things I would say. Studied the same papers, and Alex is absolutely right in that they really don't make any big attempt to hide all this. They just know that nobody's going to pay any attention, and they know they control the mass media, so the masses aren't even going to know or care what they're doing.
And Jim, you know, in the X conference, I had the most interesting conversation with Scott Jones, former U.S. Naval Intelligence, and he said that Werner von Braun, who was the head and paperclip in our getting our rocket space program in White Sands, that before he died, he had told a close associate that the United States needed an enemies list in order to keep the economic pump going, and he laid it out this way. He said it would be the Soviet Union, and then the Soviet Union would change and not be an enemy, and that the next would be terrorists.
By
and
the way, Linda,
exactly. All that
and
was outlined
and just
in the
to finish,
Iron Mountain.
Yeah, exactly, Iron Mountain, and that the third...
Which there is a controversy over its provenance, but if you'll read it, it's just a blueprint, and they're following right along with it.
Well, let's jump to... Well, just wait, because you guys, just the third and the fourth are so interesting. The third was asteroids hitting the Earth, and the fourth was extraterrestrials. And this was Wernher von Braun laying this out.
Well, see, yeah, that's the whole
enemy list.
Right now, it's the, you know, it was the Jewish conspiracy, and then it was the communist conspiracy, and now it's the terrorist. And if the terrorist war doesn't hold up, then their ace in the hole is, oh, we're being attacked from space.
Exactly. They've always got a scapegoat, when in truth it's these Luciferians. But Linda, you just keep bringing up all these great points. You talk about von Braun saying there's a blueprint for manufactured enemies. Listen, the Project for New American Century, they don't hide this. This was Bush's exploratory committee for president set up in 97. Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld wrote most of the papers. It's on their own website. Just type PNAC into a search engine, folks, and they say in these white papers, I spent days in the aggregate reading them, and they say in one of the white papers, they say, Saddam is not a threat, he is a convenient pretext to secure the oil supply and to use Iraq as a military launch base against Syria, Iran, and possibly Saudi Arabia. Then they go even further and talk about how there's 60 other countries they want to invade, how they want to create this national draft, compulsory domestic service. I don't think people understand that there's 12 draft bills that have been introduced over the last 2 years, two versions of the 12 in the National Service Act. One is 18 to 26, one is 18 to 49. We're going to have to serve as people who are up to 49 years of age domestically, and it describes the TIPS program, tattling on neighbors, digging ditches, all sorts of police state activities. To graduate from high school, you'll have to serve 20 hours a week. The New York Times reported that you'll have to watch on your home computer surveillance cameras around the country as a slave of Homeland Security, reporting, quote, crime and terrorism. It is literal Sovietization of America. Look, people keep saying rumor of a draft. There have been bills introduced for 2 years. Senator Hagel said 2 days ago that we need to go ahead and pass the draft, and after the globalists blow something else up, you're going to see a national draft, and your children are going to march off for deadly vaccines in the military and to breathe clouds of depleted uranium.
Hey, but Alex, the Bush administration, though, said today that no, they don't expect that we need this draft because, after all, it is an election year. But do we remember another Bush who said, read my lips, no new taxes?
Well, this sounds like madness, is it? What do these people want? We'll be back in a moment as the roundtable discussion continues. So the question of the moment, Stephen Quayle, is this what the secret societies want? They want this tension. They want polarization. They want to create this fear amongst all of us. They want us to argue with each other. Is this what they want?
Well, absolutely. Their motto, order out of chaos, is absolutely the prime directive of them. They generate the chaos, and then out of the chaos, and basically that's out with the old, meaning everything that they determined to be old, and in with the new. And it's amazing to me, George, that more people can't see this. You know, the Hegelian dialectic is really simple to understand. You create a problem, you provide the solution, and in providing the solution, you bring about your desired intent, and it's the enslavement of all mankind. Now, as you and I have been talking on the different shows we've done about the dead scientists, I don't think people grasp what we're talking about. We're talking about biological weapons that these gentlemen have perfected, that number one, they funded, number two, they perfected, but then they killed the guys that could make any kind of difference to, number one, acknowledge that, hey, this was made by such and such a lab, and also that could do anything about it. So now we're at a time in history where specific bioweapons that are called ethnic bioweapons can be used against any group. And that's exactly, and for all of the people who are listening of the Muslim faith, that's exactly what the point is. After they get, these guys are engineering this war between the faiths. And when I say these guys, the New World Order guys, they plan to just basically release specific bioweapons to kill the people that they have determined have to, in other words, that's their cleanup procedure.
Well, let me tell you something, Steve. Just yesterday, a virus expert said in the United Kingdom, now listen to this, he's saying that this bird flu virus, the avian flu, this new one that's out there, he said that it has a possibility of spreading from human to human. And he says if this occurs, it will be 40 times worse than what happened during the pandemic in the early 1900s, where there were anywhere from 20 to 30 million people who died. If it's 40 times worse than that, you're talking about 800 million people that could die with something that might have been man-made.
Well, let me say this. They will die with something that has been man-made, but again, influenced by the progeny of Lucifer, and I mean that literally the devil's stepchildren. The point that people have got to understand, as Alex speaks, as Jim Marr speaks, as Linda speaks, we're pleading for sanity. You know, we get dismissed as everything you can possibly call a human being, but we all do our homework. And again, that's something that people cannot dismiss lightly. Look, they may hate the message, but if the evidence is there, they owe it to themselves, to their future, to their grandchildren, their children, to understand this stuff really exists. Whenever anybody hears the word that it's a SARS-like virus, the word L-I-K-E, all that means is that, look, somebody's taken the SARS virus and they've genetically altered it using recombinant DNA techniques, and even though it looks like something, it's been tweaked. In other words, God, when he created everything, everything was good, and Genesis says, and the Lord saw that it was good. It's amazing when men in rebellion against God create things, the ramifications, maybe three steps down the line, are okay. But when you get to the tenth step down the line, that's when people die. And I know from the book of Revelation, we're talking about half of the planet's population being destroyed. And this is something that I try and get to people to understand. The devil hates the image of man. Even those who have sold out to him that are listening to this broadcast, it's like a woman who has a picture of her ex-boyfriend on her table, and when she finally decides to dump the guy, she tears up his picture. You know, we've all seen the Hollywood production, stomps on it, whatever, sometimes lights it on fire, and that's exactly what Lucifer has been doing to the fabulous creation of humankind. You've got to ask yourself this. If the devil, who is one of the most important figures in history, created perfect in all his ways until pride was found in him, then you've got to understand that something is unique about mankind and so special about mankind. And that's why all of us were on this round table, and that's why you do what you do, because there's something phenomenal about human beings when they are walking in their created realm. And again, we've talked about the angels that fell, the fallen angels. The point is that all history, you can't get away from it, all history centers around that time and a specific event where, whether they call them angels or gods, everything goes back to that, and those who rebelled against the living God are determined to destroy his image.
So what do we do about all this, gentlemen and ladies? What do we do? How do we get rid of these people in office? How do we react to this?
Look, the average person has a conscience, and we're not sociopathic, we're not sadistic. So it's the social Darwinism that they believe in, that they're in power, so we're animals, they're allowed to do to us whatever they wish. And you know, going back to race-specific bioweapons, earlier I was talking about PNAC, you know, saying that Saddam wasn't a threat, but that they wanted his oil. Dick Cheney wrote that before the war. Then you have PNAC saying, we need another helpful Pearl Harbor event. That's in one of their documents. We've got Brzezinski, the founder of the Trilateral Commission, in his book, The Grand Chessboard, saying that we need another Pearl Harbor event for imperial mobilization. And they do divide us. But look, there's nothing more American than being against this phony war. And they're very crafty. You notice Hillary Clinton and Chucky Schumer and Ted Kennedy and Kerry all voted for the war, and they're for staying in the war now, quote, under UN control. See, that's the good cop.
Well, are you saying we should pull out now, right now?
I'm saying that we should, look, they control it. It's going to go down the road of civil war, and then the UN's going to come in and be the savior. All I'm stating is they've gotten us into this quagmire, they've set it up to do this, and PNAC all along said that that was the plan. And so this is another example of problem, reaction, solution. They do this over and over and over again. They create Saddam, they put him in power, they tell him to attack Iran, they give him the weapons, they tell him, go ahead and invade Kuwait. He does it, they go in, they don't take him out of power. Then 12 years later, they go in, they salt the earth with depleted uranium, you know, do all this horrible stuff to our troops, and then they have Ted Kennedy and Hillary Clinton come out against the war, though in reality they voted for it. Then good conservatives see that, you know, see these liberal goons being against the war on the surface. They think, my goodness, the war must be good. So see, that's the mind control. That's the Hegelian dialectic going on right there. So what I'm saying is, we should have a real debate about this. We should have real elections in Iraq. Look, at first the Iraqis weren't shooting back. At first they were all happy, most of them. But then suddenly, when they saw arrest and policies put in place, some towns, all the men down to age 10 arrested, can't have a job unless you're wearing a Halliburton RFID bracelet, this outsider Chalibi, this torture master from Iran, running things in Baghdad, they on purpose created policies to create resistance so we can fail. Then the UN can come in with the right policies and be the savior and be seen as this good thing worldwide. So this is about legitimizing the UN. When Bush said the UN isn't legitimate because they're not for it, that was the globalist lying to us. This actually legitimizes them, but in a bad way, to con the people into accepting it, into going along with it. And I think everybody needs to see these images of the dead troops. They need to go to prisonplanet.tv, where we've got them right there on the main page. They need to see what this is doing, the reality of this. And those that say that we shouldn't, don't believe in the First Amendment, don't believe in honoring these troops, and at the same time, you know, really believe in censorship. And I just can't believe that some people think that we shouldn't show these flag-draped coffins.
Well, wait a minute, Alex. Let me share with you what somebody with an intimate knowledge of our of Iraq had to say. In 1999, former President George Herbert Walker Bush, along with Brent Snowcroft, published a book called Towards a Renovated World. And in there, he explained why we didn't complete the job in 1991 during the Gulf War. And here's the exact words. He says, trying to eliminate Saddam would have incurred incalculable human and political cost. Apprehending him was probably impossible. We would have been forced to occupy Baghdad and, in effect, rule Iraq. There is no viable exit strategy we could see, violating another of our principles. Furthermore, we've been self-consciously trying to set a pattern for handling aggression in the post-Cold War world, going in and occupying Iraq, thus unilaterally exceeding the United Nations mandate, would have destroyed the precedent of international response to aggression that we hope to establish. Had we gone the invasion route, the United States could conceivably still be an occupying power in a bitterly hostile land.
And that's
well,
Jim, where we are.
Too bad his son couldn't take the cue.
And the British were thrown out of there before. And, again, they knew exactly what was happening, but instead of focusing it on PNAC or Bush's words in his own book, and I have it sitting right here in front of me, instead of doing that, again, they focused in on a Democrat, or they focused in on some dissatisfied administration official, instead of focusing in on the proof. And I mean, just a quick example of them diverting people off an issue is Monday, USA Today, headline, U.S. government ran drills eerily like September 11th, drills of flying hijacked jets in the World Trade Center Pentagon. Well, I had that 2 years ago off the Pentagon's own website, that 2 years before 9/11, they had run a drill. They ran a drill the morning of 9/11, but instead of the media focusing on the drills that were carried out that they all know about, they focused in on a drill that got canceled. So they do this over and over and over again. Instead of focusing in on PNAC, where Dick Cheney says it's all about oil, they focus in on O'Neill or on Clark and then go, oh, well, they're just dissatisfied, when we have their own admissions admitting that it's all about oil and, quote, a new world order.
Alex and you all, why do you think that Tony Blair in Great Britain joined so passionately in this preemptive strike with the United States?
Because England, Forbes even admits, it isn't Japan, it isn't the Arabs. England owns the majority of America. Then it's the French and the Dutch, and then some folks in New York. So that's who really owns America, and the British Empire never failed. It learned how to become covert. And notice, you've got this ultra-socialist, pro-EU, New World Order promoter in a love fest with Bush. See, so-called conservatives? There's your proof. I'm a real conservative. I'm not the one that's going to sign the assault weapons ban in September like Bush. I'm not the one for open borders. I'm not the one who signed campaign finance reform. I'm not the one giving nuclear reactors to North Korea and supercomputers to China. George Bush is out Clintoning Clinton in his actions, but the rhetoric is different, and so people are being fooled. There is no difference between Clinton, Kerry, and Bush. They are nothing but puppets of the New World Order.
That's true.
Oh, just say it the way you feel, Alex, huh?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm getting out of control here.
Where's Quayle? Is he still arguing with a waiter about the check?
Probably. But, George, let me tell you something that, you know, I have to agree with Alex, although I'm not yelling about it that loudly, but that's where the evidence points. And I think I speak for everybody on this panel when I tell the audience, don't believe us. Don't trust us. Go out and study the material for yourself, and you're going to find out who's telling you the truth.
That's my frustration, is that I live this. I'm obsessed with this because it's so interesting. And we're supposed to be spiritual creatures that are informed, enlightened, like Steve was saying earlier, like Linda's been saying, like George has been saying. I mean, this is such an amazing broadcast. And to see people, look, the average high schooler, they had a poll just last year, 75% of seniors don't know who the vice president is. Most people don't know how many continents there are. They don't even know where Iraq is on a map, but they'll tell you their opinion about it. People, I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm saying you're focused on issues of little or no significance. You can tell me all the basketball or baseball scores, but you can't tell me what the Fourth Amendment is. You better find out, because the Supreme Court just threw it out 2 weeks ago.
Stephen Quayle.
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you this, because you've heard the emotion of Jim Mars, you've heard the emotion of Alex Jones. You're pretty calm. How come?
Well, first of all, I think that it's important that people hear the actual details. Both Jim and Alex focus on this stuff to the degree that they track it, they map it, they declare it. And as Jim said, don't believe us, don't listen to us. Check us out. And I make the statement, we've done our homework. The reason I'm being quiet is because I think that the passion that Alex just expressed, the determination that Jim has expressed in this situation, it boils down to this. There are people right now that have put into effect plans and programs to bring about the entire destruction of the United States.
That's it, yes.
And that's
yes.
where we're at. See, can I am at nine and a half in my concern. You know, people said, well, you've been saying the terrorists are going to strike. When are they going to strike? They're going to strike in a cohesive, orchestrated manner. Every day, Doug Hagman at Northeast Intelligence Network and Laura and Lisa and all the analysts, Sean, they're turning up stuff that is saying America isn't just going to get hit with a few attacks. They're going to be destroyed. And they can only make that statement because they know that they've got both Russia and China backing them up. You see, this is the thing that concerns me.
Well, what's
the
your
most.
Definition, though, Steve, of destroyed? Are you talking about trying to kill all of us?
I'm talking about
disorganization.
Hold on, Alex. Take a breath. Take a breath.
George, let me just tell you and quote from you from Maxwell Taylor, who was a big Council on Foreign Relations guy, the ambassador to South Vietnam. This guy knew what he was talking about. And I have an article, an interview with him from about 1972. And he said, bluntly, that overpopulation is the real problem and that by the year 2000 that they needed to depopulate the world by about two-thirds and that this would be accomplished through regional conflicts, starvation, and plagues. And sounds pretty much like what's happening right now, doesn't it?
Right, and I think the thing that people have got to understand is even when Zbigniew Brzezinski, who Alex has been talking about, he's an interesting gentleman. We are now seeing the full effects of weather modification. We're seeing some extreme weather. We're seeing the effects now of all the signs and the sun, moon, and stars. The whole situation, this planet, especially the United States, because those who have been given, you know, to whom much is given, much is required, we have abdicated our role, and the rest of the world sees us as carpetbaggers. And
right.
And the thing is that we are being set up. So when Al-Qaeda is used, when whatever groups are going to be used to bring about this whole downfall, I'm talking about the total destruction of America. Let me quote Tatiana Korozhina, who Alex referred to earlier. The economic advisor to Vladimir Putin prior to 9/11 knew that 9/11 was coming. She also stated after 9/11 that the real test is yet to come, and she said Americans would be naked in the streets. Understand, this is a Russian. This isn't anybody that we're talking to, but she's also probably one of the most well-connected individuals in the world. And when she was talking about that, she was talking about the orchestrated attack. It's not just the Russians. It's just not the Chinese. It's the North Koreans, the Syrians, the Iranians, and everybody else who hates our guts, which at last count in my book is about 182 nations.
And she said, Steve, that the deadhead, translated out of Russian, that the Skull and Bones group was going to be behind it, and that's why I get so upset. People get upset about the football game going bad. I am really scared and upset, and we can turn things around if people just get the word out about what's happening here. And Russia, all these people are being used as surrogates by the globalists that want blood, that want death, that want to use this as their final victory.
All right, the roundtable discussion continues now with you. We're going to open up the phone lines. And let me tell you, I think technically we can probably pull this off right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, back with Linda Moulton Howe, Steve Quayle, Alex Jones, Jim Mars, and you. And welcome back in all seriousness with our guests, Linda Moulton Howe, Jim Mars, Steve Quayle, and Alex Jones. So when you flew in from Philadelphia, Linda, did you expect this kind of a program tonight?
I think so, because it's like the past, the present, and the future are hitting us in the face more and more. We're in old Mesopotamia. We're in what feels like one of those childhood games where you put your finger in one end and you put the other finger and you pull and you can't get your fingers out of. Everything is kind of colliding from a part of history that set everything in motion and right now seems to have the tiger by the tail in terms of the whole world. And what Alex and Jim, who have studied this their whole profession, they are speaking almost with the passion, I've been trying to tell you this. And now we're all sitting here saying, well, these aren't old dusty books. We're living this now, and our entire nation and the world are at stake.
All right, let's go west of the Rockies, where our first call, Linda, is for you. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Gary. I'm calling from Santa Maria.
Welcome,
my question,
Gary,
is for Linda, and after this is such an important question, maybe the other panel members, if time allots, can chime in. I would ask for a 25, 23-second comment after my question.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Okay. Designer anthrax, maybe mixed, or designer smallpox bird flu. If our troops are the only ones in the world that have got the anthrax vaccine, it seems to me entirely possible that a designer disease could be designed to only wipe out our troops, where the UN would have to step in and bye-bye, troops. You got the anthrax vaccine? Fine. You just marked yourself for the designer weapon that would take you out. Very, very possible, I believe. Now, my 20...
Can I respond to that real quick?
Yeah, jump in, Jim.
You know what he said actually has already happened. In the first Gulf War, you know, we now have so many of those people, those veterans who are sick with what is now called Gulf War syndrome, and yet the French had a large contingent there, but they refused to take the vaccinations, and they don't have Gulf War syndrome.
Okay, let's go back to the caller. Go ahead.
My 25-second comment.
All right.
I have talked to you before, George. You disagreed with me. I still think that with eBay, with transferring of funds electronically, with filing your income tax electronically, by God, we need to get an electronic petition to recall the politicians and the judges that think they have more control because of the lobbyists than we do.
Well, I didn't disagree with you. I just think it's difficult to do.
Well, I think it can't. If you can buy something on eBay with your signature, if you can file your income taxes with your electronic signature, then by God, you can put your name to recall a politician.
But that's
and
what they want.
But
to manipulate that.
Right. The politicians don't want it to be easy to remove them.
Whoop, where'd he go? Still there?
An electronic petition could start recalling them with the other talk shows. End of comment. Thank you for it.
Okay. And Linda, he directed his question to you about anthrax and the possibility of a sinister situation. I'll let you react to that, then we'll go to the next calls.
Well, briefly, designer biological weapons have apparently been in discussion in our government for a very long time, and that goes back to the Majestic 12 documents that Bob and Ryan Wood have assembled. And in the Interplanetary Phenomena Unit document, it talks about their having, and in the what was called the Majestic 12 White Hot Paper, it talks about how four security guards died hemorrhaging of blood after handling non-human entities in a crash called Landing Zone 2 at White Sands Missile Range. And then later on in a document, it talks about the fact that retrovirus was identified in these non-human bodies, and we know today examples of retrovirus are AIDS, Ebola virus.
Mm-hmm.
And this paper said there might be the potential for biological warfare weapons out of the retrovirus in these Majestic 12 documents. Those go back to the late 40s and the 50s. Do we have proof that we have done anything like that? No. Is it potentially possible? Yes.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. And who is your question for?
It's for Steve. Hi, this is Dave from Sunland.
Hi, Dave. Go ahead, and this is for Steve Quayle.
Yes. Steve, you know, as a member of Coast to Coast, do I run the risk, after listening to this program and listening to all the programs, of being killed by these secret societies or even my loved ones, too? And I'd like to hear the answer on the radio. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Well, absolutely. They're talking about, in the United States alone, Alex has got the documents, but they're talking about 200 to 220 million Americans. So that's about, you know, quick and dirty, that's close to 90%, 85, 90%. And this is what is so damning about the plans that they have. And by the way, I would go on record as saying that the retroviruses already have been produced. Alibek, some of the Russian defectors, especially some of the guys that were murdered, Vladimir Poshnik.
They've been around for 30 years.
Yep, they've been around for so long, and it's beyond retroviruses. Retroviruses is like the Model T. What they've got now is like the supersonic. So the point is that the viruses that they have are beyond retroviruses. They're basically recombinant, and then you get the non-human entity element in there, and you combine the genetically altered viruses and you subject them to specific waveforms of electromagnetic energy, and it actually transforms the underlying. And I will go on record as stating that I believe that some of the inoculations, George, that the first caller was referring to are an absolute binary time bomb in our armed services.
They're a precursor to later be combined with something else.
Yep, mm-hmm. when the time comes, our servicemen will be exposed to element B, whatever that might be, and a lot of men are going to die. So, the fact that the French didn't get Gulf War Syndrome, the fact that we did, it shows you that it was an inoculation. I believe that the armed forces of this country are our finest, our bravest, and some of the most wonderful people on this planet, and you sure don't put them in a battlefield and make them guinea pigs.
They're the ones that can protect us.
You got it.
Can I add
the idea?
Yeah, go ahead, Alec.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, the caller calls in and says, will they get me if I, you know, get involved? Look, that's the fraud. And I'm here to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, that almost everybody I talk to is waking up. Most of the military, most of the police I talk to are good people. They know something's wrong. We just don't have to go along with this, just like the people in Eastern Europe with Ceausescu. If we're aware of the facts, this show, one of the biggest broadcasts in the world, is doing a lot to wake people up. They said 2 years ago, all police, all firefighters, you got to take the smallpox shot. 99%+, according to the LA Times, said no. Then they couldn't force the police to make us take it out of the Model States Health Emergency Powers Act. So it's simple. If they test the waters and know that we're not going to go along with their plan, if they create a crisis, they won't do it. We can preempt them by having an awakening. And there's more of us than there are of them. Only a few thousand globalist minions and only a few hundred owners of the planet, we outnumber them billions to one. It is now time. It is now time for all of us to have courage, unanimously stand up and wake up to what's happening and say no to this.
Do you remember Howard Beale from the movie Network? He had it right when he stood up and says, you know what, I'm just not going to take it anymore.
I'm not going to take this anymore.
That's right.
I want you to stick your head out the window, and I want you to tell the people running this that we're not going to put up with it.
That's right.
You
write
like
a letter to your editors.
East of the Rockies, go ahead. Who's your question for? Hello?
Hello, George.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Diane from Rutland, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
My question is for Jim Mars.
Sure.
And I have to preface it with just a little bit here first. First of all, I am someone who's done my homework, Jim. I'm very familiar with everything you all have been talking about, and I agree with you 100%. Every time I watch the evening news and I see our American soldiers on there, I see on their right shoulders a flag. A flag decal that is displayed backwards. And it irritates me every time I see it because I know the Illuminati is very big into symbolism, and I think that they are trying to shove it in our faces that they've taken our country from us.
Yes.
Do you agree with that, Jim?
Yeah, I think there's evidence to show that that's exactly right. In fact, the flag that we see is, there's a technical argument that it's not even really the flag of the United States, and so many of them are flown with the stripe side down, which was traditionally a sign of distress.
That's in Congress.
Yeah.
Now, I did notice that once when they pulled the Saddam Hussein statue down. You remember that last year?
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't noticed it now. So you say, caller, that you see this quite a bit?
Yes, every single soldier has a backward flag on his or her right shoulder. Notice the next time you watch
the news. All right, I'll look for that.
It's backwards.
I'll look for it. Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
I haven't noticed it. Steve, have you?
No, I haven't.
I've noticed it.
Have you? Okay. So she's right?
Well, in some cases they do it. Also, if you look at the Senate, they have the fasci or the Nazi symbols put there in 1949. The bundle of sticks with the hatchet on the top on both sides and the flag straight down. which if it's upside down is a sign of distress, but if it's straight down, that's the symbol of a defeated country.
Interesting. Wild card line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hey, this is Adam from Boston.
Hi, Adam. Go ahead, and who's your question for?
It's for Alex. Let's just say I'm a 21-year-old college student who, as Alex would say, awoke into all of this about 6 months ago, and I came across a public TV show dealing with Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
I went on the internet shortly after that show, did some searching, stayed up all night researching, and the next day I went to the bookstore and picked up Rule by Secrecy, Jim's book. And it's been a roller coaster ever since, to put it plain. But my question is regarding something which I haven't really heard mentioned on your show very much, and that is both the Denver International Airport and the Israeli Supreme Court building. It seems these newly constructed facilities are drenched in the symbolism that we've been talking about, or you guys have been talking about, particularly the Denver International Airport.
I get a lot of calls on that, Alex. Do you on your show, the Denver Airport and the very strange things that
Absolutely.
Are there?
Absolutely. In fact, in the archives of Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv, we have a section, but we have a new section today, the Globalist Illuminati language in your face, and it goes through this. You know, why is the pyramid outside of the Louvre in Paris, put up a few years ago by François Mitterrand before he died, why does it have 666 pieces of glass? He demanded that. Why does the Denver International Airport have satanic pentagrams, piles of dead children, images of Nazis smiling, machine gunning them? Why is there an admitted FEMA camp built there on the airport? And we have a whole section on Infowars.com dealing with all of this occult symbolism and the different ways that they mass program us, because symbolism and numerology and the occult is very important to the elite, and they believe by having their totems of power out publicly before them, just like the Druids, that that gives them power. But perhaps sometime we could do an hour on the Denver International Airport, because there are just thousands of square feet of giant murals with just the most indescribable satanic Nazi garbage, again, right out in plain view. It is really frightening. But, I mean, that's just one example of all of this. And then the caller also mentions the Masons. Look, Masons founded Texas. A lot of the founding fathers were Masons. And then George Washington later said, look, this isn't the Masons I, you know, was brought up in. It's been infiltrated by the Illuminati. We were just a secret construction guild guarding mathematics secrets of how to build buildings. Now we've been infiltrated by this group. So that's what the Illuminati does, is whereas the Masons started out okay with Solomon, as Linda was mentioning in the first hour, now it's being infiltrated over the last 200 years by these black magic practitioners. And what was just a secret university, because mathematics was a hidden technology, has now been overtaken, and they've used the secrecy of the Masons as a nesting ground for higher-level Illuminati activities. But most Masons never make it above the 32nd degree. Most Masons don't know that there's 360 degrees, so they're not aware. They're compartmentalized, just like the CIA and the FBI. And that's why the globalists use the pyramidical symbol of compartmentalization, of command and control, where only those at the very top have all the knowledge. But we can have all that knowledge by studying their activities, and that's the passion of my life, getting a complete map of their operation. You can know the mind of Lucifer and thus counter him.
So you guys have done your homework. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Lauren. I'm calling from Medford, Oregon.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi. My question is for Steve. In all the times I've heard you on the air talking about Bush and his, his involvement with Skull and Bones, I have something's been bothering me for years. He has this really apparent contradiction, President Bush, with his professed Christianity and his membership in Skull and Bones and possible involvement in
the Devil will come as an angel of light.
Hold on, Alex. Right. Alex, that's for Steve.
I'm sorry.
Calm down.
Anyway, and apparently there's involvement in satanic rituals that he, participated in. And, you know, all through his campaign, he said the Bible was his favorite book. And in Bob Woodward's new book, he says that he did not consult with his father about Iraq, that he has a higher father that he appealed to. That's a quote.
Oh.
And I want to know if Steve has any information about how and when it was decided that he was going to present himself as such a fervent Christian.
Well, first of all, let me share this with you. After 9/11, I think he had a chance to really heal the wounding that 9/11 caused. You know, Jesus made a statement, if Christians don't confess him before men, he won't confess us before the Father in heaven, okay? And the thing that bothers me the most is that, from reports that I've gotten, is he considers the name of Jesus to be too divisive. Now, if a Christian who claims to be a Christian makes that statement, I got to tell you this, by their fruits, you know, you shall know them. Also, 1 Corinthians 10:21 says you cannot take of the cup of devils and of the Lord's cup. And one of the ceremonies in the Skull and Bones is actually drinking either wine or blood out of different deceased individual skulls, i.e. Geronimo Pancho Villa. And for people who think that's crazy, a couple of years ago, the Mexican government asked Yale to give them back the skull of Pancho Villa. So to make a long story short, I do not believe one can be a member of a secret society and swear allegiance by oath. Jesus said, let your yeas be yea and your nays be nay. And I just think that, let me share this. I think that Christians in America must hold him accountable to the Bible he says he believes in.
More questions when we come back on Coast to Coast with our roundtable discussion panelists. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back. I'm George Norrie as we talk about secret societies and how they affect really all of us with Linda Moulton Howe, Jim Mars, Steve Quayle, Alex Jones. And we will stay by, Linda and I, and those panelists that can, will stay by for one more hour at the top of the hour, just for you, those of you who I'm sure will not be able to get in this hour, and some of you, I think, according to Tom, have been holding until the end of time. So let's go to the phones again, get rolling away. Wild Card Line, you are on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is John from Houston.
Hi, John.
I really want to thank you for this program. I think it hopefully would open up a lot of eyes, and hopefully, same thing with the Da Vinci Code, which basically a lot of people read, and hopefully that opened their eyes too. But my question is actually for Linda. Linda, you were talking in the first hour about the Moravian Canes.
Yes.
And I kind of want you to expand on that a little bit, because I think one of the other guests kind of took it a different direction. But from what I understand, from particularly like from Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and Lawrence Gardner's books, Lost Secrets of the Sacred Ark and Bloodline of the Holy Grail, he really, particularly Gardner, was really going into the fact that they were really pushing the concept of serving kings, that they were duty-bound to the people, and particularly in Gardner's book, Lost Secrets of the Sacred Ark, the concept of enlightenment was for everybody, not just for the elite few on the top.
Well, what I have learned about the Merovingians is that there is the possibility that they actually were not human in their original source. And if they were not, and I don't know exactly what they were, there have been implications that they might have been of a reptilian line, a Nordic line, all sorts of things like that. But let's assume for just a moment that they had a cohabitation on the planet, and whatever their agenda was, that the byproduct to Homo sapiens sapien or the humanoids was that we learned a lot from them while they got something from us. And then there was that motion of the Merovingians up into Europe. And the question right now that Jim and I and others have talked about quite a bit is the reference to the blue blood of the royal lines on this planet that have always seemed to play such an important role, specifically because there was a non-human bloodline going back to a cohabitation with something non-human that was here, used the earth, may still be here, may still be influencing through some of these secret societies, but that the royal bloodline was then the residue interface between them and humans, and that's where we would be today on the planet in this discussion.
Okay, and I guess my only other comment is a lot of the books I just suggested, it seems like in almost all those books, it seems like France, particular parts of areas of France, just seems to keep coming back and back and back and back. And also, like the PR of the Sion. My other question is
Rennes-le-Château.
Yeah, exactly. I guess my other question is, it seems like ever since the Iraq War and even before then, France has been like the most vocal of all the European nations. And it seems like to me that they're trying to position themselves to be like the leading voice of the forming economic union. Is that maybe some sort of coincidence, or maybe you think there's actually something more to that? I'll listen off.
Okay, and remember though, they were owed a lot of money by Iraq as one of the reasons they didn't want this to happen.
Yeah, there were practical things, but Jim Mars, if you're still there, I wonder if you could jump in here in relationship to what you learned when you were working on Rule by Secrecy, and you and I talked about the ironic bloodline link between Adolf Hitler and, guess what, possibly a Mesopotamian line.
Right. But the question that the caller had about France, there's several levels here. Number one, France, of course, it was French nobility that fomented the First Crusade and led the crusade over to capture Jerusalem. And this, of course, began the genesis of the Knights Templars, who took a lot of the artifacts, a lot of the knowledge, a lot of the text out of Jerusalem and carried it back to southern France. They knew it was there because it had come down through, again, the Merovingians who had migrated there from Mesopotamia. This is this spread of knowledge and information that began in the ancient world and then moved over, and France at one point was the focal point of this information. Now, another thing that has to do with this is that most people haven't heard about this, but I have the major news media stories in my files beginning in 1998 and up through early 2003. There were what was styled as amazing new archaeological discoveries in Iraq, and it was being done by German and French archaeology teams. And there is an argument, Dr. Michael Sala for one makes this argument, that within the halls of the Pentagon and at Langley, that these people either knew or suspected that they might be picking up fragments of ancient technology, things that could be used for weaponry, things that could be used, for new technology. And, of course, we can't allow our enemies to have that. We want to have that, and we want to have direct control over it. I say we, I mean the people who actually run this country.
Well, can I?
And that's the people that we've been talking about.
Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
Well, I mean, regardless of, did they have secret technologies, they're in Babylon. I mean, certainly, they found batteries in Rome from 2,200 years ago. But regardless, the globalists in their own policy reports say they cannot allow any sovereign country to be out there, whether it's good or bad, no matter who runs it. They can't allow any sovereign country because they can't allow any rival to develop the technologies that the globalists have been suppressing here in the Western world. They're at least 30 years, and this is their own admission, ahead of what they're telling us about. So on the wider scale, what Linda and Jim are saying is absolutely right. This war for global dominion is about suppressing technologies and ensuring that we, the people, don't get access to them. They want to suppress our development while the elite moves forward.
Steve, do you see this as a push toward a possible World War III scenario?
Absolutely. And I think that, again, with just the statements that have been appearing in the last week, I think that Defense Minister Ivanov going to China 3 days ago, Kim Jong-il being there, and now
obviously
the big Korean...
Cheney, right?
I'm sorry?
Cheney.
We're building for something. And again, people have a short memory. They don't understand that, again, due to the beliefs of Al-Qaeda, they have to warn. They believe it's a foundation of their religion. And based on what Doug Hagman's turning up on Northeast Intelligence Network and the stuff that's appearing now on the boards, they're not talking about terrorizing America. They're talking about destroying it. And they're talking in specific nuclear terms. They're talking in specific biological terms. And this is something that if they're talking those terms, then Americans had better come to the terms of what's getting ready to happen. Alex has done a lot of work on the prison camps that are already planned for this country.
I've been to them.
Yep, and I can tell you point blank that some of the highest-ranking guys that I've ever talked to in my life talk exactly about how many bases under George Bush Sr. were turned into underground, if you will, camps. Most of them were built during the Cold War, so they had nuclear facilities in them. In other words, they were built to withstand nuclear weapons. So the point that I see Russia's running almost on a full scale, how do I say this, at the speed of light to go and build their Yamanotu mountain complex. Everyone's getting set for what they know. Dick Cheney's building his bomb shelter
and
his home at the observatory.
Isn't it suspicious?
To answer your question specifically, I see World War III, and I think the only way it can be averted is absolutely for Americans to get a grip on reality, repent, and do something about the acquiescence. Listen, we have no one to blame but ourselves if we don't speak up and become active.
Steve, isn't it suspicious that we have Dick Cheney in China earlier this week, Kim Jong-il there, the dictator of North Korea, and at the same time, we have other people meeting in China, and then magically he's coming back from the trip. Obviously he didn't follow orders. And, I mean, this is very suspicious. 3,000 people dying in giant explosions right after his train passes. George, what do you think of this?
Well, and now we're beginning to hear, Alex, about the possibility that the train track on one of the trains was diverted for the collision. Intentional.
Bottom line, Roosevelt said things don't happen by accident. In politics, they happen by design. That's to paraphrase.
And George Norrie says there are no coincidences.
Well, I heard you earlier this week talking about, or I guess it was last week, on 9/11, the lottery comes up 9/11.
Yep.
The Chicago Mercantile comes up 9/11. Fox Television with a lone gunman. The secret government wants to fly a hijacked jet in the World Trade Center. The Long Kiss Goodnight, made in 96 with Samuel L. Jackson, where the government official says we're going to blow up the World Trade Center again for martial law. The globalists love to throw all this in our face. None of this is by accident, and this thing in North Korea stinks to high heaven.
Let's go back to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, lady and gentlemen.
Yes.
John in New Orleans.
Hi, John.
My question is for Jim Marr.
Mm-hmm.
Now, earlier, George, you had asked a question, maybe to all of them, and I think that it wasn't truly really answered. I am not just talking about education and doing our homework, but knowledge. I'm talking about physically, overtly, what can we, all of us, and individually do to ensure against our demise at the hands of any or all of these secret societies?
Okay.
That's you, Jim Marrs.
Well, first off, it's kind of been mentioned, but let me just emphasize this. See, there is a secret that we hold and over these elites, and that is that there's more of us than there are of them.
Yes.
By the sheer knowingness, if you talk to people, they go talk to people. Expeditionally, you raise the consciousness, you elevate the knowledge. By the sheer knowingness that we begin to understand what's happening, it's going to at least slow it down and perhaps even stop it, because the only way they can make this work is for everybody to go along. And if everybody just simply says no, then it isn't going to happen. But now, on a more practical level, let me tell you things you can do. Write letters to the editor of your local newspaper. Believe it or not, the media does respond to numbers. And if you get people writing letters to the editor, if you'll write to your radio stations, talk on the talk shows like you're doing your part right now. None of us are going to be left out of this. We all got to do it, okay? We all have a part to play. And I hear this all the time. Well, I'm just one person. What can I do? And I'm sick of hearing that, because all you have to do is study history and you find out that nothing constructive has ever been done by a committee or a mob. It takes individuals working hard, and there are many things you can do.
It's always a small, highly motivated group that takes action, that sets bushfires in the minds of men and women everywhere. The spectators don't count. It's who is in the game. And look, the globalists in their own psychological warfare documents admit, this is public stuff, that 90% of the wars now are in the mind. We are warring. We are smashing enemy forces right now. We are changing minds. And, again, I absolutely agree with you.
International line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Hi, George. It's Steve calling from Toronto.
Hi, Steve.
I just wanted to ask Alex about the biggest conspiracy to hide the soul-saving name of the creator, Yahweh, and his son, Yasha, and how come nobody's talking about that? That's the real issue about saving souls.
Well, Alex, is that right down your bailiwick? I'm not sure.
Well, certainly, in
1984, they changed the labels. They changed the terms. You know, a conservative today means a big government, gun-grabbing, open-border promoting person, but people just buy the label and go along with it. And certainly they've changed the names. They've manipulated the Bible. They've changed the name. You know, Jesus Christ, obviously, is Greek and isn't the, you know, a proper name of Jesus Christ. But that's part of a larger program of changing names, changing labels, scrambling it until it is just that balkanized, fractured, divide and conquer, George, that you were talking about 2 hours ago. And so we've just got to get down to the basic humanity of the basic message and just get past all the labels to what is right and wrong.
And if the code, sigils and letters and symbols and Hebrew language and others have always been part of this big story of evolving secret societies, Bible code, too, put together by the former Washington Post reporter, it has a very sobering conclusion, which is debatable. Some people argue that the Bible code is subjective and interpretive, and others say no, it came from the source of a brilliant mathematician. But Bible code 2 says that there's going to be a nuclear war on this planet by 2006.
I believe the globalists are preparing for it, but I believe shows like this, talking to tens of millions of people, can change that. I mean, that's why I'm so stunned to be on this broadcast, because, I mean, this is, frankly, one of the biggest things on the planet. And, again, just thank you, George Norrie. Thanks to everybody, and I'll be happy to stay for the fourth hour.
Okay, and, you know, and I know, panelists, if you can't stay, I fully understand that. You've already put in 4 solid hours for all of us, so I'll have Tom talk with all of you in the break just to see if you can stay or not. But though some stations do not pick up the fifth hour, Steve Quayle, your website, stevequayle.com, of course. And, of course, that's linked with coasttocoastam.com. Stephen, I want to personally thank you at this moment for your continual support and information that you give everybody on Coast to Coast.
Well, thank you, George. And it's just again, an honor and a privilege to be able to be on a round table. And I want to just thank you immensely because, again, it's things like this that change history. And I believe, without sounding anybody's horn or blowing anybody's horn, that this is a history-changing event that's taking place on Coast to Coast tonight.
Well, there will be many of these discussions because it's just important. It affects all our lives. Jim Mars, of course, you just do a phenomenal job, and I think the world of you, as you know that, and, you know, just keep up the fine work that you always put in, Jim.
Thank you very much, and sounds like we may even be working together here before long.
It sure does. Sure does. And, Alex, of course, you're new to the mix, but I love the passion that you bring to these issues that we talk about. And so we will be having you back more and more and more. So we'll check in with the panelists. We'll see which one of them can stay for one more hour. I'll be here. Linda Moulton Howe, earthfiles.com. She'll be here. And then at the end of, I guess, the fifth hour, we'll have Linda tell you a little bit about what we're talking about on our next Coast to Coast program. She's got an unbelievable story about that microbiologist from Area 51 I was telling you about last week. We'll be back, another live hour, Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to this very special hour of the roundtable discussion here on Coast to Coast AM with Linda Moulton Howe, Alex Jones, Stephen Quayle, Jim Mars, and you, of course, your phone calls. Some people have been on hold for almost an hour, maybe more, so we will go right to the calls now. And please address your question to one of the panelists first. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Is that me?
It is you.
Thank you. This is Beverly calling from Chicago, Illinois.
Hi, Beverly.
Hi. And my question is for Steve Quayle, but before I ask it, I just want to tell you how historic this is. This is, I think, the most important program I've heard in years of listening to WLS.
Thank you.
You're wonderful, all of you. I'm so happy to hear you all on at one time. Mr. Quayle, I am today, or yesterday, what happened, we have a weather forecaster here, a local weather forecaster, who is quite famous in our area, And he's been on the air for over 30 years. And he is the only television weather forecaster who has mentioned that these terrible tornadoes that just went through Illinois, we had 31 of them, that he, in all his time of being a meteorologist, has never seen this happen before. That this is very, very unusual. And also today I heard that the snow that fell in Colorado is also highly unusual. What is your take on it?
Well, first of all, it's a twofold take. The sun has been so hyperactive, and there's massive amounts of bombardment of the sun right now by electrically charged comets, asteroids. I'm with Jim McCanny, Professor McCanny, on his electrical comet theory. But also, it appears that basically what we're picking up, and when I say what we're picking up, in some of the forums, there's actual talk about weather modification and weather warfare being exerted against the United States. Now, people have got to understand there's been a treaty against weather warfare since the early 70s in the United Nations, and it's a piece of cake. In other words, the terrorists that can go out and buy, and I'm not saying it's necessarily terrorism that's doing it, but I make the claim that the weather is too unusual to be passed off as just some of the same old stuff. What you're telling me, ma'am, about the guy that's been there for 30 years. Again, everything is abnormal. Everything has not been seen like this before or experienced. So I think we're experiencing a twofold whammy. We're seeing a massive solar disruptions, and the solar winds obviously influence us. And then also, there is so much weather modification going on by, if you will, secret weapons that it's a free-for-all. And I believe that, again, men's vanity will ultimately cause us to fall in, I'm speaking mankind in general, will fall into the trap that we've created.
Can anybody tell me why we're paying record prices for gasoline when
yes.
we now have taken over the world's second largest oil reserves out
yes,
there in Iraq?
Yes, I can tell you, because we're not getting any out of there. Before
right.
we invaded Iraq, Saddam Hussein was a member of OPEC, and we were pumping 3 million barrels of oil out of there a day, and now we're down to about 800,000
well,
because
let me expand
of the destruction, because of the bombings, because of just, and that may be part of it. It may be, instead of trying to gain control over the oil, it could be that we're trying to stop some of that oil so we can run the price up
yes.
and make other oil fields under the control of the Western nations and the Western bankers more lucrative.
Yes.
Which makes the Saudi political leader, Bandier, who when he said, or at least Woodward's book implied that he may have said that he would help the United States coming up before the political election in 2004 by releasing more oil, and now he's backing away
right.
from
now,
that.
Now
it's going to be very interesting to see how this year unfolds.
Well, right. Oh, this is going to be a very interesting year.
Well, on the BBC, that's at coasttocoastam.com. It's also on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv, but the story's on Coast to Coast right now. At least it was a few hours ago when I looked at it. They found record oil supplies. They're finding new giant reserves everywhere. They've got new technologies to go deeper. But they're artificially creating scarcity. And, again, the PNAC white paper said that by going into Iraq and shutting off the oil supply, that would then allow them to boost Venezuelan, Saudi Arabian, Alaskan crude prices for these select companies. So what Steve and Jim and, of course, others have said is absolutely on target. And you have to understand it. The British took control of Saudi Arabia and Iraq. They still control Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, OPEC isn't running anything. And if you look at the profits of Shell and ExxonMobil and every other major oil company, they are at record profits, the biggest profits they've ever been making. And so they give you this artificial view that there's no oil, or give you some excuse that, well, the refinery's having a problem or something, whereas in reality they've got record oil. And actually the oil is flowing out of Iraq. It's going out of the Haifa oil pipeline. Israel's getting it for free now. And at the same time, they're just jacking up the prices. So all of this is about a massive global monopoly. That's what's really happening. It's artificial scarcity. The UN...
And Alex, let's bring it full circle and point out that Shell, one of the largest ones going that just recently bought up Texaco, is owned by the Dutch royal family, who are big members of the Bilderberg Secret Society meetings.
And they're in the middle of a huge scandal right now, by the way, because apparently they... twice this year downgraded their proven oil reserves by 20% or 4 billion barrels, and apparently there's some major scandal now about what they're doing. They apparently are exaggerating the estimates of their oil reserves, and nobody knows why.
Well, there's a lot of manipulation. You know, Bush said that we're not going to tap into the strategic reserve. It's brimming. This is a big, corrupt scam. The Democrats, the Republicans aren't talking about it because the oil companies run America. Look, there's enough oil to run this country for decades and decades and decades in Alaska alone. But none of that crude gets to California or Oregon or Washington or Canada. It all goes to Japan and China, fueling their machines that are putting our businesses out of business. So, again, it's about monopoly capitalism. It's not free market. It's a fraud.
Back to the phones. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is David from Beverly Hills, California.
Hi, David.
Directing my question to Alex Jones.
Sure thing, sir.
I do investigative research, and for a long time, several decades. I think that, why don't you comment on the idea that Zechariah Sitchin's work with the depopulation of the Earth and the current desire for these elites, World Health Organization, NSSM 200, to depopulate the world by, you know, a large percentage of the population. And the second item to comment on is the letter between Albert Pike and Joseph Mazzini about a three world war agenda.
These could be better questions. In fact, earlier I wanted to get into the Albert Pike situation, but an hour ended. Okay, let me cover the first one.
World population.
Okay, world population. Again, I'm a person. All I do is go off documents, bills, legislation, public statements. I want all the listeners to understand, this is not my opinion. It's not Steve's opinion. It's not George's opinion. It's the facts. I have hundreds of publications, dozens of books by chancellors, royal family leaders, media moguls saying they want a world government and a world police state so they can then orderly sterilize, release biological weapons, and kill 85 to 95% of us. Prince Philip just wants 80. Ted Turner says 95% on C-SPAN in 1997 at the press dinner. This is the plan. Now, they caught the UN in 1999 in 100-plus countries adding a female hormone to a tetanus shot in a program just for women that sterilized them. They just caught them a few months ago, and this was all over the foreign papers, mainstream news, a big Indian lab tested it. They caught them again adding stuff to vaccines that sterilizes women. I have on my website, Infowars.com, the Dr. Henry Kissinger population control documents. George, I'll do a show on this. Where in 1973, it was declassified in 92, we have the actual document, he sent letters to all these third world countries saying, you get no IMF or World Bank money unless you forcibly sterilize half your women. And India and Nigeria and others followed suit, drove around with vans, grabbed women, forcibly cut their organs out. You talk about a nightmare on Nazi scale. That happened. This is public, and when they get their police state grid in place after using the fake terror threat that they've created as the pretext, they're going to start ratcheting this up. And earlier people mentioned the flu. Steve, you remember this? I heard you break the story. In 1999, the CDC went up in some secret operation, but it went public in the AP, and dug up the bodies of dead whalers who died during the influenza outbreak and took the live virus out of their lungs. The influenza outbreak killed 40 million people.
Exactly. That was in 1918, something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they've dug up these dead frozen bodies up on the north coast up there, and now they've got this, and now strains very similar to it are popping up. Now, to get to his second question, Albert Pike, Linda was mentioning how the globalists came out with plans to create these crises. So did Steve, and so did Mr. Mars. In Albert Pike's Morals and Dogmas, dogma in a letter he then wrote that's at the Naval Museum in London, England. He said, we're going to have a First World War with England and the U.S. against Europe. We're going to have a Second World War to bring in a world government against Germany. And then we're going to have a war between the U.S. and Russia, a continual war. And then we're going to have a war against the Muslims. It'll be World War III, and we'll kill masses of people. And out of that, all religion will be abandoned, and people will accept Lucifer. Now, this is a public letter. How did he predict this? How did he know this?
Was he that good? I don't think so.
This was back in, 1875.
Unbelievable. That's frightening. It's frightening. This whole show is frightening, but it's
true,
real.
But it's a plan. It's a plan that they've been working on for hundreds of years, perhaps even thousands of years, and it kind of comes back to Linda's question way back there when she says, you know, who are these people, and are they even us? Because we've been talking about the weather abnormalities, we've been talking about a war, we've been talking about everything that's going on, and when you look at it, we are basically destroying or at least despoiling the planet that we live on. And why would anybody do that? Why would you kill the goose that lays the golden egg?
It's suicidal.
Unless you're not from there, and so you don't care what happens to it.
Do you really believe that, Jim Mars?
No, I'm just throwing it out for discussion.
All right.
Well, these people are psychopaths. They're self-destructive. It doesn't make sense, hence that argument that David Icke and others have. Steve, what do you think?
Jim, I'm just a follow-up. What do you think from the end of Rule by Secrecy that you were really implying that the Anunnaki that had basically a hold on this planet might still have influence?
Well, let's follow my thinking here, okay? According to the Sumerian tablets, the cuneiform tablets, of which there's about 500,000 in existence, only 20% have been translated, and were only discovered and been paid attention to since the early into mid-1800s.
Mm-hmm.
We hear the story of the spacefaring people who come to this planet and who manipulate Earth primitives and create a worker race, okay? Now, if that's true, then there's only one of two possibilities. They either left at some point, or they're still here. And how would we answer that? Well, you look at the historical record.
They use secret societies to control it.
If they're still here, if they all left, then there should only be just a unbroken evolution of humanity. And yet, look at the record. Look at the record. Look at the Vedas. Talk about the Vyamas, the flying machines. Look at the Bible. Talks about Ezekiel and the flaming wheel. Look at the flying shields of the Middle Ages, the dragon boats, the flying machines of the ancient Chinese, all the way up through the Middle Ages, all the way up to the airship of 1897, all the way up to UFOs, all the way up to the crop circles, all the way up to the abductions. You know, millions of people report these abductions. So the historical record tells us they're still here.
Well, Jim, why then do the elite, say in my film Dark Secrets inside Bohemian Grove, why then do they engage in these bizarre occult rituals? How does that tie into this?
Life
because
form.
That goes back to them, too. Somebody asked the question back during the program. You know, if they set themselves up as gods, then who created them? There is a universal creator God.
Alex?
And they follow their particular rituals, too.
Alex, out of the research into these rituals that involve certain things related to sexual matters, and you find this throughout Europe and other places coming up into the United States, it all seems to relate to trying to tap in to a life force, and now we're back to the issue of extending life through those rituals.
I think, let me throw my two cents in on this, because demons, D-E-M-O-N-S, are disembodied spirits. When the giants who roamed the earth that were the progeny of the fallen angels and the earth women, which you guys are calling Anunnaki, I call fallen angels. The fallen angels created a race. Those race became the mighty men of renown. Genesis goes into great detail on it. The word Nephilim comes from the Hebrew word Nepal, which means to fall or the fallen ones. So now you've got disembodied spirits wanting to become re-embodied. And the disembodied spirits, if you take like the British Museum's attempt to reclone or to reanimate Ramesses, I would say this, that the demons, even in the New Testament, the demons always had a desire to express their appetites through humans, to the point when Jesus cast the demons out of the demoniac, the gathering demoniac, they besought Jesus to let him go into the pigs. When they went into the pigs ran off the cliff. And so we've got the tampering with the human race because in my opinion, the universal God is the creator God who has defined life, who has created life, and now you have the devil, a real fallen cherub, if you will, beyond an archangel who's tampering with this to try and turn people away from the living God. And he's doing it by saying,
sense.
You will become God.
That makes sense, Steve, because in Bohemian Grove, in my video, when they're shooting the ritual, they first conjure the dead Grove members and ask spirits to appear. Then they speak to the idol as a male and a female, and they believed in this. I was there. These world leaders believed in this. Why? So are they conjuring just the dead? First they conjured the dead, then they called the spirits there. Do these spirits need to be called to appear?
Well, yes, and the deal is that's the whole point of an invocation. If you boil all black magic, if you boil it all down, it's the invocation of spirits. It's the familiar spirits. It's the conjuring of familiar spirits. Familiar spirits can basically tell you what Uncle George did all his life. It's not Uncle George's spirit. It's a familiar spirit, and this is the thing that people have got to understand.
So instead of guardian angels, these are the evil angels that have been around you your whole life so they can con you.
Well, first of all, there's a difference between fallen angels and evil spirits. But here's the point. It goes back to the Middle Ages, the reports of incubus and succubus. Do you mean to tell me that the Anunnaki, supposedly our progenitors, are stopping off at the best little whorehouse in the universe called the Earth to have sex with Earth women? See, it doesn't hold water. You have the same thing. Brad Steiger and others are talking about, even Whitley Strieber talks about, he couldn't describe his abduction experience in any terms other than what medieval
incubus
people described
as it all sounds like the exact stuff we had in the Dark Ages. The abductions are the exact same thing of demons attacking.
We've got still another half hour to go of live programming for you. We'll be back with the roundtable discussion and the rest of your phone calls. We'll try to squeeze as many of you in as we can.